across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
We are here and we are ready for the great debate between Andre Walker and George Galloway. But before that, we are going to head up to the news.
Across the UK, online and on DAB Digital Radio. The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conrad.
Order!
On Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to the show with me, Alexis Conran, here on Talk Radio. We are ready for the big debate. With me, I have George Galloway. Good evening, sir.
Good evening to you.
And Andre Walker. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Very much looking forward to this. So I want to also hear from you at home. I want to find out what you think about the big result that we have just had. And so give us a call here if you want to speak to George and Andre and myself. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need. You could tweet us at Talk Radio. And of course, you can text the word talk to 87222 followed by your message. Before we hear from Ross Kempsall, our political editor, quick word from both of you, just a quick reaction. Andre, she's won by 200 votes versus 117. Yeah. What's your feeling?
Well, look, Neville Chamberlain only got 20% of the parliamentary party voting against him, and that ended his leadership. She's got a third of the parliamentary party against her. Remember something. This morning, Philip Hammond was saying that the people that were opposed to Theresa May were, quote-unquote, extremists. 117 extremists. You cannot lead a party where you believe that 37% of them in the parliamentary party are extremists. This woman is toast. I accept she's got the hide of a rhinoceros, but actually it's time to go.
George, there's a glass see you case. Smiling.
There's a glass case in the Natural History Museum waiting for Theresa May, marked Dodo. She is as dead as a dodo. Jeremy Corbyn will bring a motion of no confidence now in the Prime Minister. It will pass because enough of the 117 will sit on their hands and abstain on it. And, of course, they'll then flock back to the Conservative ranks for her successor. So although she was saying tonight, I fight on, I fight to win, that's exactly what Mrs. Thatcher said just before she didn't.
Right. Well, as you can see, settle in. We'll be here till one. There is a lot more to come. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need, or you can tweet us at Talk Radio. Ross Kempsall is in the studio with us, our political editor for Talk Radio. Ross, we've had the result. She seems to be... She's made the statement outside Downing Street. She's not going anywhere, even though Jacob Rees-Mogg has been on the airwaves already, demanding that she go and see the Queen. Are we likely to see any movements happen this evening?
I can tell you what the Prime Minister's plan will be in the next few hours. I'm told that tonight she's making preparations for European Council summit tomorrow. She's expected to go to Brussels tomorrow AM. She will also be there on Friday. So she will be meeting European leaders, I'm told now, for 2 days. That will be an attempt, as she told the 1922 committee at 5 PM and just said outside Downing Street within the last few minutes, to secure concessions on the backstop issue. Now, what form those concessions can possibly come in, what form they will take, is the big key question facing Theresa May right now, because although she has won in essence, although it is debatable whether in reality this vote of no confidence, the question is, of course, what happens with the meaningful vote? That is the next vote for Theresa May, which really matters, if not indeed a Labour motion of no confidence in the government. Labour sources telling me tonight, giving me words from Jeremy Corbyn, who has put out a statement off the back of this result, saying that the Labour Party urges Theresa May to bring back to Parliament her deal without delay, so that the view of the House of Commons can be clearly demonstrated. Now, that suggests to me, in fact, saying that Parliament should take back control of that deal next week. That suggests to me that a vote of no confidence from the Labour Party may be imminent, more imminent than thought, perhaps. Likewise, the vote on the withdrawal agreement, still a massive question about when this is going to happen. Does tonight change the parliamentary arithmetic for Theresa May in terms of that vote? Difficult, really, to argue that it does in any way. So she still has this huge barrier ahead of her, unless she can convince the DUP and Tory rebels that whatever she now comes back with is good enough to gain their support.
Ross, thank you so much. You have had a very long and hard day, I can imagine.
Captain's innings it was.
Round
of applause.
It's been thrilling, Alexis. It really has. It's just been one of the most exciting days. You know, this is what we really live for in terms of political theatre. And I think that one of the key interesting points, and this is what's being pointed out to Tory sources to me on both sides of this divide tonight, is just how vicious the blue-on-blue briefing has been. It's continuing right now. Actually, the Christmas party for Conservative Central Office is on right now, and I'm told that the Tory dance floor, they are chanting "Oh Theresa May" to the tune of "Oh Jeremy Corbyn," that song, the Seven Nation Army, right now, amongst Theresa May loyalists. They're telling me tonight that tonight, 63.1% of Tory MPs voted in favour of her. That's 200 MPs in the parliamentary party. Now, when Theresa May was elected Tory leader in 2016 on the second ballot, she had 199 votes in favour, or 60.5%. So they are spinning a 3% increase there as an argument for Theresa May's support actually increasing amongst Tory MPs. Likewise, the reverse, the other side of the Conservative Party, saying the opposite of that. Jacob Rees-Mogg has just said again that Theresa May should resign. It's a terrible result for her. They are pointing out the fact that Theresa May has now made the Conservative Party, in theory, vulnerable to a no-confidence vote in the government across the whole House of Commons. And just widen out that view from 317 Tory MPs to the 650 MPs in total in the House of Commons. Imagine 650 MPs. We now know, of course, none of the opposition parties support Theresa May. So only 200 MPs in the House of Commons have confidence in her. That is a real situation which you could argue in modern parliamentary terms is almost unprecedented for a prime minister.
Thank you, Ross. And we look forward to hearing from you a little bit later on. And of course, you will keep us updated should any breaking news happen. So thank you very much. That's Ross Kempsall there, our political editor. Gentlemen, as we heard from Ross there, the talk now, of course, is Jeremy Corbyn going to put in for a motion of no confidence in the government? Ross was saying, of course, now we know that she has support from 200 of her MPs, so 200 in Parliament. But I think, are people making the mistake of assuming that the 117 Tory MPs who voted against her in this particular vote are also going to side with Jeremy Corbyn in a vote of no confidence in the government?
No, most of them won't, but enough of them might. And it doesn't need many, because if you've got all the opposition parties, and don't forget 117 Tories were against her, but there's 10 DUP also against her on top of that.
But they have said that they would support, they would vote against the withdrawal agreement, but they would support her in a vote of no confidence should one be brought.
They have. But the 117 have not said that.
No.
In fact, Jacob Rees-Mogg is practically on his way to the palace himself to beseech Her Majesty to require Theresa May's resignation. So the answer to your question is most of them will not support a Jeremy Corbyn motion of no confidence, but enough of them might. The only way to avoid a very early, by which I mean next week, motion of no confidence in the House of Commons is to bring the withdrawal agreement to the table for a vote earlier than she had planned. You'll recall she said she'd do it before the 21st of January. Mm-hmm. Well, she now needs to do it before the 21st of December.
Which is, of course, because Parliament goes away on their Christmas holes next
even
Thursday, Friday.
That. Yeah. Even earlier than that. But that's going to have to be extended, perhaps, because if the withdrawal agreement is not brought back quickly, it'll be trumped by a Corbyn no-confidence motion. And if that wins, it doesn't mean Corbyn becomes the Prime Minister. Doesn't even mean there'll be a general election, because someone else can come forward on the Conservative side and persuade the Queen that they can command a majority in the House of Commons and that they should be allowed to form a government. But Theresa May is a dodo. Take it from me.
Andre, what is your take? If George was saying the only way to avoid the vote of no confidence in the government is to bring the meaningful vote forward. Yep. She's been around. She's met with people in Europe. She was going to meet Leo Varadkar today, but of course she had to stay home and deal with this situation. I think she might be going there tomorrow. Do you think she can, whatever she does, she can still avoid that vote of no confidence? And should she get it, can she win it?
Well, look, I think the first and most important thing to say is to listen to a former Labour MP and Glaswegian trade unionist misunderstand the issue of tribalism within politics is remarkable. George, I've got a great deal of respect for you, but the idea that any Conservative MP is going to vote with Jeremy Corbyn on a motion of no confidence is just complete and total nonsense. The truth of the matter is that Theresa May is really struggling in terms of her support within the Conservative Party, but the idea that the Conservative Party will fracture in favour of Corbyn is nonsense. But let me tell you something else about Jeremy Corbyn. Look, Jeremy Corbyn, by the way, I'm sat next to George Galloway now. He's a conviction politician. He's an honest guy. Jeremy Corbyn is a liar and a coward, and I'm going to tell you why. Because he has supported Leave throughout his entire career, aside from now when he's leader of the Labour Party. People say Jeremy Corbyn always does what he says he's going to do, but actually the truth is he doesn't agree with Keir Starmer on a second referendum. He doesn't agree with Leave by default, Remain by default. He supports leaving the European Union. I'll tell you why. Because he's able to give state aid, he's able to renationalise, he's able to, you know, object to the European's rules on budgetary constraints. All good reasons why a good, solid socialist may hate the European Union. He believes all of them. He hasn't got the guts to admit it anymore. What a tragic state of affairs.
OK, well, some may argue that, of course, we have the carbon copy on the other side, but the exact opposite. That people will say that Theresa May,
Alexis,
Remainer.
No.
May is delivering a Brexit.
No, May is wishy-washy. Alexis, let me tell you this. May is the person who called the Conservative Party the nasty party. Right, in what way is she a dyer-in-the-wall Conservative like I am?
Okay.
She isn't.
Let's deal with your accusations of Jeremy Corbyn. I know that a lot of people disagree with what some may call Lexit, for example. I think a lot of people, there is the argument that, of course, the European Union does not prevent nations from putting forward agendas that Jeremy Corbyn has been in favour of. You, I know, Andrew,
yes,
because we know each other.
Yes,
you will call them lefty socialist or whatever. But let's set aside that. George, what have you got to say with what
Andre
has come up
with? First of all, it's important to listen to what people say, and I didn't say that they would vote with Jeremy Corbyn in a no-confidence motion. I said they might sit on their hands. Mm-hmm. And if you say to me that Jacob Rees-Mogg, who's probably in the Mall right now shouting up at the Queen's window, is going to go through the lobby in support of a motion of no-confidence in Theresa May in Parliament, I don't believe you. I think he'll abstain.
Oh, come on, George, of course he will.
There might be enough of the 117 that will abstain to see the motion go through, with the caveat that I made. It doesn't mean they're voting for a Corbyn government, doesn't even mean they're voting for a general election, although they run the risk of that happening. But it's perfectly possible now that tonight's no-confidence vote will be carried over in one form or another into next week, unless Theresa May immediately, and there's no reason she cannot, she was supposed to have the vote on Tuesday night. She can bring it back.
Well, hang on. Can I just say this very quickly?
No, you can't.
George.
I'm ringmaster, and I've got the final vote. No, because we're going to move on to the withdrawal agreement and what Theresa May can bring back that may see her get that vote passed. She still has to convince 111 of her own MPs to vote for this deal. So we'll get onto that a little bit later on. But I was specifically with you, George. I want to deal with this issue about Jeremy Corbyn. Some may say that Jeremy Corbyn has been very faithful to his political ideas. He's not the kind of politician that will, once he became leader, change his views because he wants to move on to more popular deals. He staunchly has remained true to his beliefs, even when, during the 2017 general election, when he was being questioned in one of the live debates, and I remember, I think it was whether he would push the button and all those kind of debates. People trying to get him to say what a prime minister is expected to say, and he didn't. And I think that he got a lot of credit for that. However, there is also the criticism of Jeremy Corbyn that one of the things he got elected on was that he will bring the Labour Party back to its roots, back to its members, and he will give it back to the grassroots. Now, the grassroots, every poll tells us, are not for, especially not for a hard Brexit, but they're pro-Remain. And why has he not shifted his position to what the grassroots of his own party, which he wants to give it back to them, are telling him?
Well, it depends what you mean by grassroots.
Well, is it because what Andre says, that he's a closet Brexiteer?
Well, you're arguing two opposite things. You're arguing that he should come out for Remain, and Andre's asking that he comes out for Leave. In fact, he's hidebound by two things, one of which you've just referred to, the fact that the Labour membership is pro-EU. But it depends what you mean by grassroots, because grassroots for me is not the members of the Labour Party, but the voters of the Labour Party. And 65% of Labour-held constituencies in Britain are Leave voting areas,
but that's not anymore, though, George. If the recent polls that have been done for Best for Britain and the People's Vote are to be believed,
well,
and I know
not.
We all have, well,
yeah, don't believe them.
Well, of course you won't want to believe polls that you don't agree with.
There's only two polls. No, there's two polls that we all have to agree with. One of them was the referendum in 2016, and the other was the general election in 2017. Corbyn ran on a manifesto that said, we accept the result of the referendum, and Britain will be leaving the European Union. So he's twice got the message from the voters, and he will heed it. By the way,
I think
that if there's any man in politics who cannot fairly be described as a liar and a coward, it's Jeremy Corbyn. Coward, my goodness, he's sitting in front of hundreds of Labour MPs that have tried repeatedly to stab him in the back. That's not the action of a coward. And liar, well, he's certainly no more of a finesser of parliamentary opinion than any other leader of a political party in Parliament would be.
Jeremy is not here to defend himself. Of course, should he wish to defend himself, he's very welcome to call in. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need. You could tweet us at Talk Radio. And of course, you can call in and have your say, speaking to Andre and to George. We're going to be here until 1 o'clock in the morning. And we are going to talk about what is going to happen later on. Already I can see some texts and some tweets coming in, and I will get to those, I promise. But we want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000 is the number that you need. Andre, you were pretty strong there on Jeremy Corbyn. I know that's your style. But what have you got to say to what George has to say in the fact that he has remained true to his word? So in a sense, you're kind of arguing with yourself a little bit there.
No, look, George is, and I say this with the greatest of respect, I have to say one thing, first of all. You know, when I watched George Galloway appear before the Senate committee, it made me proud to be British. The way that you destroyed that joke of a hearing against you, the way they defamed you and you fought against it, I thought that was phenomenal. But look, good people can be wrong, and George Galloway's dead wrong on Jeremy Corbyn. George Galloway's talking about the Jeremy Corbyn of the past, not the Jeremy Corbyn of today. You know, the Jeremy Corbyn of today has completely flaked over the European Union. You just said, Alexis, is he Remain or is he Leave? This is a man who throughout his entire career has railed against the European Union. He has no love whatsoever of the European Union, as no good socialist. Okay.
You can be critical of the European Union without wishing to leave the European Union.
And Alexis,
some may say that the sensible thing to do if you want to change an organisation is to change it from within rather than walking away from it.
Alexis, if Jeremy Corbyn wants to come on this show now and say what I said for 40 years about the European Union was merely an attempt to reform it and not to leave it, look, I'm up for that, but it's not true. And also, on the issue of polling with regard to the European Union, Professor John Curtis himself, I think one of the greatest experts in our country at this time, said that in truth the polling is no different today than it was before the referendum. Always remember, Remain were ahead in almost every single poll up until referendum day, and in the end Leave won. So, you know, polls can be wrong, and they often are.
George, the criticism of the Labour Party, and Andre started us off on Jeremy Corbyn, so we might as well sort of clear up the issue, but there is a criticism that has been levelled on the Labour Party in regards to its stance on Brexit. Some may say that they have decided to, Labour Party members have said, never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake.
Yep. They want Napoleonic dictum.
Napoleonic dictum. Perhaps some might say that that's not really a great way to do politics. People want to know what you're for rather than what you're against. People want to follow you for your ideas. But I think there has been that criticism levelled at Labour because it seems that what they are asking of Brexit, what they feel Jeremy Corbyn has repeatedly said, if she cannot get a deal, she should step aside and let us have a go. But then when you look at what they think they can get out of Brexit, it seems almost more unrealistic than what the Tories have been doing.
Well, look what Jeremy Corbyn's strategy to date has achieved. We're talking in a special programme on Talk Radio about a really very difficult night for the Prime Minister. The Conservatives are split from top to bottom. And if you were to extract those that actually draw wages from Theresa May...
163 of them, I think.
Yeah, 163, and she only got 200. So actually, he has brought a tremendous amount of difficulty to the government.
That's the job of the opposition. No, I'm sorry, he really hasn't. This is not a Jeremy Corbyn job. This is a Jacob Rees-Mogg job. Everybody knows that Rees-Mogg started this by standing up in PMQs and saying he had no faith in the Prime Minister. Corbyn's nowhere to be seen on this issue. He fluffed it today at PMQs.
He's the leader of the opposition. And
is he
the,
really?
The government that is facing him is now in, I'm arguing, terminal decline, falling apart at the seams. Most leaders of the opposition would regard that as a result.
Okay, we've got to go to some breaks so we can pay the rent, but we do want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need, or you could tweet us at Talk Radio.
The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conran on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show with me, Alexis Conran, here on Talk Radio. As you can hear, I am joined by George Galloway and Andre Walker. And we are picking through today's result. May won by 200 votes to 117. That is a majority of 83. However, she has lost the support of nearly a third of her parliamentary party. So we have a party, essentially a Tory party, that is split right down the middle. Can she continue? Well, this is what Rees-Mogg had to say straight after the vote.
It's a very bad result for the Prime Minister, but if you think 163 Conservative MPs are on the payroll, they're ministers, PPSs, vice-chairman of the party, trade envoys, and therefore of the non-payroll, of backbenchers, the Prime Minister lost really very heavily. And if you're on the payroll, you ought to resign to vote against her. But clearly the Prime Minister has lost the support of the backbenchers of the Conservative Party, and that is not a good position for her to be in. In 1990 and in 1975, the then leaders of the Conservative Party, Margaret Thatcher and Ted Heath, both won the highest number in the votes for the leadership, and they both resigned because they recognised they did not have sufficient support to carry on. And I think the Prime Minister should resign. She cannot get her deal through. Her very bad, unsatisfactory withdrawal agreement, which is not supported by the DUP, by many Conservatives or by the opposition. And having failed in her main plank of policy, it would be constitutionally normal for her to retire from the fray.
That's what Mr. Rees-Mogg had to say. We've got a couple of texts here. Alexis and George, the outcome of this vote showed that roughly a third of the Conservative Party probably want a hard Brexit, while two-thirds probably want a middle-of-the-road deal. I'd say if Jeremy Corbyn had a vote on himself, he'd be well happy if he actually had a real definitive opinion on Brexit. Probably two-thirds of Labour MPs would vote Remain. Remainer pundits saying that it's a bad result for May, and again, mischief-making for other referendum or general election. That's Mal in Belfast.
Well, I think that's accurate. The Conservative Party is two parties when it comes to Europe, and so is the Labour Party. The Labour Party members of Parliament, two-thirds of them almost certainly would support Remain. And we now know at least a third of the Conservative MPs. A bit more, actually, because people like Michael Gove and so on at least said they were voting for Theresa May, but they're clearly in favour of Brexit. So British politics is abnormal because of our first-past-the-post system in that it has to accommodate more than one party under the tent of that one party. But that's a longer-term project. The Labour Party is united, more or less, with a handful, maybe two dozen Blairites, ultra-uber Blairites. They want a general election, and they're not going to stop until they get one. And there's now a possibility that that general election could come, either by the means that I described, of some Tories abstaining in a no-confidence motion, and then the momentum in the country for a new general election being sufficiently great, or the overwhelming rejection of the deal and the failure of all other options to get a majority. Because you're right what you said earlier. There's actually no majority for anything in the House of Commons now, but that argues for a new House of Commons.
Well, there's only majorities in what they don't want. Yeah. So there's a majority of people not wanting a no deal. There's a majority not wanting the withdrawal agreement, etc. Let's take a call. Nova has called from Brighton. Welcome to the show, Nova. What would you like to say? Oh, we'll go to Grayson first. He's in Caterham. Grayson, welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
Yes, I'd like to, first of all, say hello to Andre and George.
Hi.
And I'd just like to pick up on one point, which was Theresa May's promise to the party this evening that she wouldn't lead the party into the next general election. And it's not impossible to envisage a situation which George has just been describing, where following a vote of no confidence, there is going to be a general election called, which in which case we basically, the Conservatives would have postponed her fate for 1 month or so, or 2 months, and or in which case she may be lying. And if she's lying, then I would suggest that the possibility of going to for a second referendum, which of course so many of the people in the House of Commons are angling for, is a real likelihood.
Andre?
Yeah, I think you've got to understand the transaction here. The transaction is that there may or may not be a vote of no confidence in the House of Commons. Incidentally, any member of Parliament can put a vote of no confidence forward. So if Jeremy Corbyn's too weak to do it,
no, he's going to
then somebody else will do it.
Weak he's not.
But here is the fundamental point. Conservative MPs are tribal as Labour MPs are tribal. There is no prospect of the ERG, the Jacob Rees-Moggs, the Steve Bakers of this world, either sitting on their hands, as George said, or voting in favour of the motion of no confidence. Now, in terms of perhaps, so the Conservatives won't vote for it, neither will the DUP. Would they want a general election, i.e. would the Prime Minister call it? No chance. Why on earth would you want to do that? But I would make one other point about Jeremy Corbyn. People talk about, isn't Jeremy Corbyn absolutely marvellous? He failed to beat Theresa May in 2017 when she was a pretty weak position. He's also faced his own leadership challenge, remember? Which he saw off, as Theresa May has seen off her leadership challenge. But here is the critical point. In every single opinion poll, including the one that counts the 2017 election, the Conservatives are ahead of Labour. Why is it? Because Theresa May is pretty awful, but trust me, Jeremy Corbyn's worse.
George. No, I don't accept that at all. Jeremy Corbyn started the 2017 election campaign 20 points behind, having had two coups mounted by his own MPs to try and get rid of him, and in the middle of a blizzard, an unprecedented blizzard of fake news propaganda. You think your hero Trump gets it bad in the media? Try looking at what Jeremy Corbyn had to fight his way through.
Well, okay,
let me speak. He lifted the Labour vote by more than anyone ever has since 1945. He got almost 13 million Labour votes, 3.5 million more than Ed Miliband had just 2 years before. That's a phenomenal achievement. So if Labour starts the next election campaign neck and neck, which is where they are in the polls, Labour will win the election. And I'll even go further. I'll give you a date for the next general election, 31st of January next year.
Oh, we've got a date. However, George, before I get back to Grayson, some may say that with the government being at the state that they are now, you've got a Brexit secretary who says, I don't need any notes, I've got them all in my head. You've got the next Brexit secretary saying, oh, I didn't realise we needed Dover that much to do trade. You've got gaffes going on left, right and centre, Amber Rudd not knowing whether there are or there are not caps to immigration. I mean, on any other given decade, should a Brexit not have been around, these are almost government-ending scenarios, and yet they seem to be happening every week. And yet Labour are still behind by a point or two in the polls, or sometimes they're a point or two ahead. There are those that say that with this shambolic government and with the way Brexit has been going, Labour, had they had a charismatic leader or a different leader, should be 15, 20, 25 points ahead at this stage.
I would be, if I was the leader, to 15, 25 points. But that leader that does not exist. Jeremy Corbyn is the leader.
But why isn't he far ahead?
He's done a phenomenal job.
Well, hang on, George, it is now
22:34, and we've spent far more time talking about Jeremy Corbyn
tonight. Well, it's
because
Grayson called in and talked about
than we have talking about a prime minister who's a lame duck. I mean, that's the real story tonight.
Grayson, do you think she's a lame duck?
Absolutely, 100%.
So
the Conservative Party missed a trick tonight. Really, they should have got rid of her. And
okay, Grayson, but then what would have happened? What would you have seen? Would you have liked to see her go, and then what?
There would therefore be a leadership election, and the Conservative Party would have to decide which way it would want to lean. Does it lean towards a Remainer, a Philip Hammond or a Jeremy Hunt, which is, in my opinion, catastrophic for the Conservative vote, or does it at least get somebody like Boris Johnson or whatever, who can at least go back to Brussels with some clean hands? I mean, it's not that he's been completely...
Boris Johnson, foreign secretary,
clean hands,
foreign secretary.
No, but
he's got the dirtiest hands at Westminster.
But what makes you think that Boris Johnson would be able to go back and get anything different from an EU27 who've said, that's it, that's the deal, we are not negotiating any further? You've had 2 years.
Yeah, I think the issue is about what the question which you put to me was, who would take Theresa May's place?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you the honest answer, what the answer should be. There is only one outcome that there should be for Britain, and that is that we leave on a no deal. Why? Because if we stay as Remain, we'll be completely humiliated. Yes, we will lose the rebate. We will lose any kind of credibility.
That's not true. Grayson. We have the right to revoke Article 50 at any time, and we will stay on exactly the same terms as we are now. We can revoke it up until March 29th of March, and we will not lose any of the rights that we have at the moment.
I think the point is, if you cannot come out of this thing, if you are Britain and you're the second most, you're supposed to be the second biggest contributor to the budget, one of the most powerful countries in the sixth largest European Union,
and
you cannot come out, you have humiliated yourself in front of everybody else. Yes, that is a devastating thing for this country to be in. And anything else, whether we remain, and certainly if we come out on this deal, which will trap us in something which is arguably even worse than Remain, yes, then it's, the outcome is humiliation.
The only
thing that will happen, if we go for no deal, yes, if we have somebody, we'll go down to the wire, and I can say with good certainty that come March, the middle of March, the European Union will come back to us.
Okay, Grayson, thank you. You've had your say. I've got your number. So when that doesn't happen, I know who to call. I'm going to go over to Nova, who's called us from Brighton. Welcome to the show, Nova. What would you like to say?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Technically, Theresa May is left two votes who voted for her, because those two were brought in from the cold after they had been suspended. And will they be back in government permanently for the next 12 months, now that they're back in the voting room?
Well, George, we talked about that before the show, didn't we? That there's two MPs whose names will come to me, or they will be handed to me. Andre will know.
Yeah, so it's Charlie Elphick and Andrew Griffiths.
That's right.
Both of those were suspended for sexual malpractice.
Important to point out, they were both suspended because allegations had been made against them, and they were only suspended. Rather, they would have been expelled if it was proved. They're suspended because, as far as I know right now, it is unproved.
Well, they're not suspended now. They were brought back in for the vote.
Well, they had the whip removed, and they had the whip restored.
They had the whip restored, and what's the optics of that?
Of course. Remember something. Andrew Griffiths used to be Theresa May's researcher in the House of Commons. Yes. So there is some suggestion. Now, far be it from me to be a conspiracy theorist, but there is some suggestion that because the two of them are arch Theresa May loyalists, that the chief whip chose to bring them back.
You don't have to be on the grassy knoll to smell a rat.
No, I accept that.
Now, you two, let's not venture into the allegations. Nova, were you happy with the result? Are you happy to see her stay there?
No, why were they brought in specifically for the vote and not before?
Well, we don't know that, and it's not for us to speculate, Nova. But what I want to find out from you is, are you happy that she won the vote?
No, she should have lost totally. I'm with everybody else on that. I voted for her, but I'm sorry I did now.
Why would you like to see her go?
She's cunning. And bringing back those two to vote.
You've just described every single politician I've ever met. What's the negative about being cunning? I say, looking at George. Why do you count that against her? Don't you want a cunning prime minister who's able to go and get a deal
and be cunning about it? She uses it against her own people.
You think she's used her cunning against her own people?
And I just wonder what, you know, Tony Blair made a lot of deals when he left government, which were kept secret. There were four that were kept secret. And I just wonder how many deals she made that have kept her going back to Brussels all the time.
Okay, Nova, thank you very much. That's Nova from Brighton. Andre. Well, actually, you don't have to put your hand up in order to speak.
I didn't know if you were taking another call.
A classroom. We will do in a second. Go on.
It is important, actually, the point that Nova just made, because Steve Doughty, a Labour MP, stood up in the House of Commons the other day and suggested that this addendum, if you like, to the withdrawal agreement, which will be the European Union saying that the backstop is not permanent, that was drafted weeks ago. And if that's true, then actually, Nova's right. That Theresa May is doing over her own people. And what I mean by that is, firstly, the people that voted for her. Secondly, the Conservative MPs, some of whom, but many of whom didn't, but some of whom supported her. But most importantly, if she is telling her own government ministers and her own parliament that she's not doing a deal with the EU and then secretly doing it and writing things weeks ago and that we don't know about, then, you know, that is a pretty disgraceful, I think, attack on our democracy.
If that were true, it's not even worth the paper it's not yet written on.
Yeah.
Because if you make a deal with me and I add an addendum that says it's not a permanent deal, but that you cannot unilaterally end the deal, then that's the same thing as permanent. Potentially.
Well, the deal,
because I could never agree. I might never agree to end the deal.
The problem is with the deal, whether you like it or not, and the DUP make a fair point on this, when they turn round and say this backstop that the Irish government and the European Union have fought hard for 2 years, if they did not want it, if it was of no value, then why did they fight for it for 2 years? And I think that's the problem that Theresa May's got over. She's turning round and saying, look, it's an insurance policy. Nobody's ever going to enact it. The Irish don't want it. British don't want it. The Europeans don't want it. So the obvious question is, why does it exist?
Well, you don't want a fire and you don't want to have a car accident, but you get insured against those things. I don't find it so illogical. Hang on, the Good Friday Agreement is a legal document that we must adhere by. Nobody wants to go back to the troubles in Northern Ireland, right? Nobody wants a border there, but we have to put yes, that but, down as insurance. Yeah. That is what we this government agreed to in December last year.
First of all, Alexis, I've got insurance policies, as we all have, and you can cancel them if you no longer require them. So the idea that you
can't drive a car without insurance.
The reason, you can change insurance policy.
You can't drive also, a car without insurance.
Also, I think there's another critically important point here that people forget all the time. My family in Northern Irish, I think I understand a little bit about the troubles. There has never been a border for the purpose of customs or a properly patrolled border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. The border that was being patrolled in the 1970s and 1980s was a counter-terrorism operation. It had nothing to do with customs checks. It had nothing to do with smuggling. What the paras were doing on the border were they were looking for guns, bombs, Semtex. They were not looking for duty-free cigarettes and sheep.
George, do you think the backstop is being used as a fake problem in order to squeeze through a softer Brexit?
Well, as half an Irishman myself, I'm entitled to say I wouldn't have started from here when asked the way to Dublin. I'm against the existence of what they call Northern Ireland. I want the border between Britain and Ireland to be in the middle of the Irish Sea, and therefore the border between Britain and the European Union to be in the middle of the Irish Sea. Any sensible person would agree to that if it meant we could have a proper trade deal with the European Union, which any sensible person would want.
But you'd be breaking up the UK.
Well, you put it that way. I put it another way.
I'd be as things stand,
I'd be reuniting Ireland, which it should never have been divided in the first place. But from the standpoint of a Brexiteer in Britain, I want a clean break from the European Union, and I want a mutually beneficial trade deal with them. If they don't want that trade deal, I'm happy to go my own way under the WTO like the rest of the world.
Well, we'll be talking about that after the 11 o'clock news. We'll be looking at this withdrawal agreement and how she proceeds on Brexit. We're going to take a little break, and after that we'll speak to Yvonne in London and Mark in Watford. Give us a call here, 0344 499 1000 is the number you need to take part in the conversation, or you could tweet us at Talk Radio.
The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conran on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show with me, Alexis Conran, here on Talk Radio. I am joined by George Galloway and Andre Walker and Yvonne from London. Welcome to the show, Yvonne. What would you like to say?
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening to you.
I don't think Theresa May is cunning at all. I think she's duplicitous, delusional, and possibly demented. How anyone can give the same answer to every question is beyond me. She has not progressed with anything at all whatsoever. And by you just keep repeating this story of the polls. No, she's not in the lead in the polls. Those polls are there to sway opinion, not to reflect opinion. You know, she's making deals behind the public's back. We don't know what's happening with the EU army. She hasn't been honest about that. How are we going to leave anyway?
And I say you confuse me there. What do you mean what's happening with the EU army?
It's not even been talked about.
Why should it be talked about? It's not on or off the table.
You had Macron saying that he wanted to form an EU army.
He said he wanted to form an EU. Both him and Merkel, about 3 weeks ago, mentioned that they want to have some sort of defence force for the EU.
Some people call it an army.
People
call it a dangerous fantasy.
People also call NATO an army, but I don't see people getting up in arms of being part of NATO. So I don't see why people are getting so excited about an EU army.
Alexis, first of all, socialists up and down this country are furious about Britain being a part of NATO. The issue with the EU army is this. It is about the dishonesty of people who are in favour of Remain. Remember when Nigel Farage debated Nick Clegg, Nigel Farage said, for all of his failings, he said that there is going to be an EU army, and Nick Clegg said, why are you saying this? It is a dangerous fantasy. Now, the truth is, there may be arguments in favour of an EU defence force. There may be arguments in favour of a European army. There is no argument in favour of being grossly dishonest to the British people about it existing. And we see that right across the board. abroad, when people say your sovereignty is not being eroded, the European Union is just an international club like the UN. No, it's not. It's an embryonic country. Now, you might think that the European Union as a country is a good thing. You might think a United States of Europe is brilliant, but nobody's ever made that case in the UK. All we've ever been told is it is simply not happening, and that is grossly, grossly dishonest.
It's also grossly inaccurate to say that it is happening, because as far as we know, it has not been suggested. It hasn't even been put forward.
Alexis, hang on.
We're going to have this conversation nice and calm, because Yvonne has called to make her point. I think we should be careful about spreading things like our sovereignty, as Yvonne called in to say, our money, our laws and our borders keeps being mentioned over and over again. We should also look at the fact that according to the government's own white paper, we never lost our sovereignty. If we didn't have our sovereignty, we couldn't be having all the discussions that we're having now, i.e. invoking Article 50, sending the money that we do. We do have a sovereignty in our country.
Hang on. You've simply asserted something that is not fair and not accurate. Right.
How is it not accurate?
So if you look at Article 50, if you look at the history of the House of Commons when it had sovereignty, the repeal of the European Communities Act would have withdrawn us from the European Union. The High Court of England ruled that actually you needed to trigger Article 50. That means that when the European Union said it had legal personality and was superior to the British House of Parliament, that is the legal position in Britain, as backed up by the High Court.
Let's ask a parliamentarian, a former parliamentarian. Mm. Did you feel impeded when you were in Parliament by the European Union?
Oh, yes, all the time.
Can you give me an example?
Well, for example, no Labour government would have been permitted to do as Macron has just done, a right-wing president, increase the deficit in the French budget to over 3% in order to pay for the giveaways he's just given to the people to kickstart his presidency after weeks of literally rioting in those streets. The European Union does not allow it. In fact, it's already told Italy that it must redo its budget because its budget will put it over the 3%. It's told Spain, it's told Portugal, it even told Portugal.
But what happened to you specifically that you were not allowed to do because of the EU?
We argued for a response to the crash, to the bankers' crash in 2008, for a programme of public expenditure and public works, which would have avoided the catastrophe of 10 years of austerity. But we were told by the government that that would produce a deficit on the budget, which would not be tolerated by the European Union.
And also, George called for a bailout of Woolworths when it went bankrupt.
Indeed.
That's illegal under EU regulations.
But
I tried to save Woolies and the European Union stopped me.
Okay, that's absolutely right. But that is a serious problem.
But the UK was not, as far as I'm aware, the EU allowed them to bail out the banks,
yes,
correct?
Yes, they allowed them to bail out the banks because the EU is a banker's paradise. The problem is most of us are not bankers. It didn't allow us to save Woolworths because you're not allowed to intervene in the economy.
But in the case of the banks, you were allowed to intervene.
You can save banks.
And Alexis, if that doesn't offend you and upset you, then nothing else will. Because you look at something like Woolworths,
I want to get back to Yvonne. I think some people will disagree with both of you here, because if you look at the EU and you look at things that are happening around the EU, so you have, for example, you have many examples. You have the city of Hamburg. They've got the city owns its own power grid. In France and Spain, you've got public and nationalised railways. So the idea that the EU does not allow you to carry out a socialist agenda is simply incorrect if you look at the examples.
State aid is illegal.
I want to get back to Yvonne.
They all predate Maastricht, which nailed down the illegality of these things.
I want to get back to Yvonne. Yvonne, you say that May will be gone by January. Do you think she'll be gone? She survived this leadership contest, which means there can't be another one. She survives for another 12 months. Why do you think she'll be gone? Do you think we'll go into a general election? What do you think is going to happen?
I agree with George because he seems to be talking a lot of sense here. May is going to go back to people that she has gone on a tour, like she's some pop star, for each one of them to slam the door in her face. Mm-hmm. How much shame can this woman take? I don't know why this woman is putting herself before the country. You know, it's not going to progress. The DUP need to stop this now because, number one, they shouldn't even have a vote being paid to join her party. I don't know why they're even being given a vote. And unless she's going to offer them more money, I can't see how things are going to change. So she has to go. People are going to get fed up. The people that want Brexit are going to get fed up. The people that want Remain are going to get fed up. The people that don't know who they even want are going to get fed up. So she's going to have to go, and she needs to go. Because this country is a laughing stock because of this woman.
Okay, but if she goes,
she has no self-awareness, and nothing can progress.
Well, you say she has no self-awareness.
What Corbyn did was he went and he spoke to each of it. Now, I voted Remain, but I would not vote Remain again under this EU as it is now, especially after seeing what they've done in France to the people. People's eyes being shot out, a man losing his hand. What kind of Premier does that to his own people? You know,
I think you may have confused what happened in Strasbourg to what's happening in France.
At the end of the day, what they need to do is what Corbyn has been doing, is talking to people within the EU who have the same agenda, that is to actually progress forward without any more wars, which is where a lot of the money is going, which it doesn't need to be. That money could be creating jobs. It could be helping people that can't eat, that are homeless. That money could be used in so many different ways. But what we're using it on, killing.
Okay.
You know, at some point we have to just become sane here.
Okay.
It's beyond ridiculous.
Yvonne, I only have to move on because I have to go to the news, but thank you for your call. That's Yvonne in London, who thinks May's going to be gone by the end of January. And I think George agrees with her there. If you want to take part in our conversation here, the big debate with George Galloway and Andre Walker, give us a call. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need. You could tweet us at Talk Radio. Plenty of your calls to come after the 11 o'clock news, and we'll also get a roundup from our political editor, Ross Kempsel. Some of the front pages are coming out, and we'll try and get some of those to you today. As you can imagine, they are pretty, pretty brutal. 0344 499 1000 is the number that you need.
Across the UK, online and on DAB Digital Radio, The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conrad.
Order!
On Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show with me, Alexis Conran, here on Talk Radio. With me, I have Andre Walker and George Galloway. Some people are saying, why are you spending so much time talking about Jeremy Corbyn? Just like George Galloway was saying. Well, blame Andre for that. But, of course, it's Theresa May. She has won a vote of no confidence by 200 votes to 117. That is a majority of 83. And I have to admit, it's a bigger majority than what I thought really? She was going to get. Wow. I thought she was going to scrape by about 15 to 20 votes. But yet, that is a third of her party that voted against her. Now, let's move on, gentlemen. We've got a couple of people waiting to come on the line to talk to us, and we're going to take their calls in a second. But I want to move our conversation on to, we know the Tory party is divided, but that is, you know, what's new. But what happens now? The withdrawal agreement, the meaningful vote. George, you were saying earlier on at the top of the hour that in order for her to prevent Jeremy Corbyn coming in with a vote of no confidence, she's got to move on that meaningful vote.
Yes, I mean, theoretically, a motion of no confidence takes precedence over all other business. So it's not in the strictest terms, I mean it, in the sense that if she brought the vote back on Tuesday and Corbyn brought the motion of no confidence on Tuesday, the no confidence motion would have to be heard first. But if she signals, and she'd be very wise to, that following her trip to Europe, she's going to table the meaningful vote next week, that would probably stop Corbyn tabling the motion of no confidence. If she doesn't say that, he will table it. I'm not speaking for him, but I'm certain that he will. And if she does bring it back, it'll be slaughtered. And it'll be slaughtered by an even bigger margin than you would have predicted, because it's not 48. It's not even the 83 members of the European Research Group. It's 117 people, plus the DUP, that will vote with the opposition against it. So it will be absolutely slaughtered.
Now, it's important to remember that she gave her speech to her colleagues today.
Yes.
And in it, there are a couple of promises that she made. One was, well, let's be abundantly clear. She never actually stated categorically that she will not lead them into the next election. So I think...
Especially an early one.
Yeah, with the language that she's using, she's left herself enough leeway to back out of it honourably, yes. As politicians would describe. But the other thing that she said is she will come back with some assurances, and she was pretty clear to say not just encouraging talk from the EU27, but some binding assurances concerning the backstop.
Yes.
If she does that, can she then get her withdrawal agreement through Parliament?
OK, Alexis, look, the problem is with your question is, in many respects, and I understand why you've asked it, but in many respects it's a stupid question. I'll tell you the reason why. If you look at Tuesday when she pulled the meaningful vote, and she then turned round and she said, I'm going to come to Parliament and make an important announcement about a new policy. And what was the important announcement about new policy? That she's continuing with the old one. Right. If you look at her on the steps of Downing Street today, she said, I have listened to my colleagues, and what I've decided is that I'm continuing with the current policy. The party needs to unify, and we're moving forward with this deal. The reason why your question is difficult is because you say, what happens if she changes her policy, if she does this, if she does that? The truth of the matter is, all she is going to do is promise to change things and then do absolutely nothing other than announce her existing policy over again. And so it just becomes a redundant point. So I'll tell you what, I will answer your question. What would happen if she genuinely changed her policy and genuinely made an attempt to get a sensible withdrawal agreement? It may well pass the House of Commons. Certainly she'd be secure in her position of Prime Minister. But I can absolutely assure you, Alexis, that is not going to happen. All that she's going to do is waste a big load of air miles flying around Europe, talking to people, having breakfast, lunch and dinner with people, so, and then she'll represent exactly the same policy.
OK, so quickly before we go to Shen in Manchester, a one-word answer from you both. Do you think she has any chance in hell of removing the backstop from the withdrawal agreement? George?
No. And the Europeans are very, very clear about that.
Yeah.
Andre? Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. And we're pretty sure that the 111 MPs that have said they're going to vote against it, they want to see that backstop gone completely from the withdrawal agreement. Shen, from Manchester, welcome to the show. What would you like to say, my friend?
Good evening, thanks a lot. Just really funny what Andrew's been saying for the first 35 minutes. I've been laughing my head off. You know, he's gone on about Jeremy Corbyn being worse than, Theresa May. I mean, she went on about strong and stable for the country for months as part of her manifesto. The country's in a mess. The unions don't like her. The unions hate her. Even her own party don't like her. We've had terrorist attacks, terrorist bombings. We've had police reductions. We haven't even got an army. Is this country really strong and stable? And just to go back on a point he mentioned, she started off in a very strong position when she called that election. She thought she was going to make it, like a 500-0, whatever Labour Party MPs, a massive reduction. She actually lost a huge majority. She actually had to go in partnership with a load of nutters from Northern Ireland to try to keep her, to keep her in power. So, how can he even say that, she's better than Jeremy Corbyn? Yeah, I think Jeremy Corbyn has his faults. Who doesn't? But I'll tell you what, he's a damn sight better person and more in touch with the people than what Theresa May is. She's on borrowed time and Andre knows it.
Okay,
so
Shen,
I had to ring in.
Shen, I'm glad you rang in and Andre will reply to you. I think we kind of have to correct you in calling the DUP what you called them. They are, you know, whether you agree with them or not, they're there. They're trying to do their bit for what they believe in. So let's try and keep it as friendly as possible. Andre, what do you have to say to what Shen has...
Well, look... I mean, I said it more in sorrow than in anger, that and I 100% stand by what I said about Jeremy Corbyn, and remember I called him a liar and a coward. And the reason I called him that was because this is a man, I repeat my comment, who supported leaving the European Union throughout his entire career and has suddenly folded like a cheap newspaper in the rain. And therefore, I believe that that is, I believe that that is an act of dishonesty or cowardice,
Andre,
or both.
Andre... The problem is, and you and I have had run-ins on the station before, I realise that you want to put your point across as brightly as possible, but calling him a liar without any evidence of him lying is going to be rather tricky for you and me both. So you may disagree with his stance.
No. Hang on a second. That is a serious accusation, Andre. Brexit is the most important issue that has faced this country since the Second World War. Jeremy Corbyn has been implacably opposed to the European Union. He has made arguments.
Well, maybe he's changed his mind, Andre.
He has made arguments. He has made arguments that I've agreed with on Europe, despite the fact I more generally disagree with him.
Generally, when you call someone a liar, you have to actually say he said one thing and then said something else, deliberately misleading people. And you don't have any evidence of that. So I suggest, seriously, we move on. George?
In Parliament, you'd have to withdraw it because, of course, you're not allowed to call someone a liar. You can accuse them of being economical with the actuality, but I suppose when we've left the European Union, that phrase will fall into disrepute. He's not a liar. I disagree with what he's now saying about the European Union. I'm not in his head. I don't know if he really means it or doesn't. But in the absence of evidence, you have to accept that he has changed his mind.
No, it's
to
naked
call him
ambition.
A coward
it's
is, however,
ambition.
To call him a coward, however, is utterly absurd. It's as absurd as it is offensive, because he has actually, in the teeth of unremitting attack, ploughed onwards and onwards and onwards.
Shen, what would you like to see Jeremy Corbyn do? We've lost Shen. We've lost Shen from Manchester.
I'm assuming the answer to that would have been win the election.
Well, we've got a question here from Dakota, who sent you both the question. Says, listening to talk radio after work and listening to Andre and my brother, George Galloway. I assume Dakota is not your actual brother, George.
No.
Okay, fine.
He's a young gentleman in the United States.
And the great debate. My question to both gentlemen, if and when the vote in the Commons happens, and this is what we're talking about, the meaningful vote, if it fails, do you believe we could possibly look at a general election? So, we have both agreed, well, you've both agreed, that she is going to be unable to remove the backstop from this withdrawal agreement. Jacob Rees-Mogg was on the screens post the confidence vote saying, unless that goes, he cannot vote for it. And we assume he's speaking for the entire ERG. That might be an assumption too far, but let's assume that for now. That seems to be the sticking point with everybody, the backstop agreement. We all have agreed in this room that the EU27 are not likely to even budge on that. They may give her something in intention, and I think already the rumours are that they've said they wouldn't like to see it put into practice, of course. Nobody wants to end up there. But that's not going to cut the mustard, frankly, for anybody who opposes the withdrawal agreement. So what Dakota's saying there, it's going to fail when it comes back to Parliament. What happens next, George?
Well, then we have a logjam, because as we've all agreed, I think, there's no majority for anything. The default position is that we leave the EU without a deal, without agreement, on the 29th of March in the absence of any other substantive position taken by the Parliament. There will have to be one of two things. There will have to then be another referendum with all the political costs of that, and I urge you not to underestimate them, or a general election which changes the parliamentary arithmetic. The Queen, who has never shown any inclination to get involved in parliamentary politics, would have a duty, I think, in looking at the wreckage in Parliament, where on the most important issue since the Second World War for this country, no majority existed in Parliament for any course of action. And I would certainly be with Jacob in the Mall asking her to dissolve Parliament, to ask the people to decide what direction they want to go in. And I have a very strong feeling that that will happen. I predict a general election, as I said, on the last Thursday in January, which is the 31st, which handily falls before the 29th of March, and allows time for a new government to be formed and to make a last-ditch effort. I agree with Grayson. Can I just make this last point? I agree with Grayson. If we look like we're on our way out the door without a deal, the EU will come to us offering a deal, because they don't want a no-deal Brexit any more than we do.
George, you say that if it's on the 31st of January, that will give them enough time. Surely you're not suggesting that that will... If we have a... first of all, there's no time to have an election by the 31st of January.
Yes, there is. You need 3 weeks for a general election. So you would
even when Parliament's not sitting?
Yeah, you would call the general election on the 7th of January and have it on the 31st.
OK, forgive me. I will bow to your superior knowledge on this. I thought you had to have much longer run-up to a general election.
No, we just did last time. That was very unusual.
Fine, but you were saying after that, you have a general election, form a government, and have time to negotiate what exactly?
Well, you would say to the European Union, we're leaving. We don't want to leave without an agreement. We don't want to just walk out the door. There are a lot of things that we should be cooperating on. But if you force us to, that's what we're going to do.
But that's what Dominic Raab and David Davis have been doing all along.
I said on day one, the day after the referendum result, that we should send an email to the EU saying that we're leaving. Our people have decided to leave. We have no intention of placing any tariffs or barriers in your way. And we trust that you will reciprocate. We have no intention of chucking out your nationals living here, and we trust that you will reciprocate. We're happy to go on collaborating on police, anti-terrorism, anti-drug measures, and so on. And we trust that you will also.
So we want to leave your club, but and we don't want to pay any more, but we trust that you will extend us the same courtesies that you extended us before.
No, it's the other way around. We will not place any barriers on your products coming in here. And we trust you won't do likewise. Now, they sell much more to us than we sell to them. Twice as much. So if you think about it, it is a capitalist club. Business is business. Mm-hmm. At the end, European Union business doesn't want to lose the British market.
It's interesting because the German head, the equivalent German head of the CBI, was on the radio this morning, to which he said, of course, losing the UK would be a massive issue because their exports are 60% within the European Union. But of those 60%, only 7 came to the UK and they could live with it. And if I recall correctly...
They would say that, wouldn't they?
Well, but if I recall correctly, what we were told is that they need us more, they need them. I believe it was Ian Duncan Smith who at the time was talking about the car industry, the German car industry, was going to rush and beat down Angela Merkel's door and say, please don't let them go because we won't have anywhere to sell BMWs
and
Mercedes.
Of course.
Yeah, but the fact remains that they never did that. In fact, what they did say is we can afford to take the hit.
That's simply nonsense.
It may be nonsense, but it's also fact.
Well, no, it can't be both nonsense and fact.
Well, it's not. So you think it's nonsense, but it's fact.
Hang on, Alexis. You have just asserted that the German car industry has taken no action in response to the British declaring that they're leaving the European Union. That's simply not true. It's
nonsense. What have they done?
Right. So firstly, there has been a huge lobbying exercise in terms of what is going to happen to ensure that bilateral trade between Britain and Germany continues after us leaving the European Union. By the way, you know, I am a Conservative. George Galloway's negotiating position is without question right, and I'm going to tell you why. The reason is this. The European Union divided up the negotiation into two strands. First of all was the divorce settlement, and secondly was the future relationship. What George Galloway turns around and says is, hey, we're going to talk about both of those simultaneously. We're going to talk about your people here and our people there. We're going to talk about your tariffs and our tariffs. We're going to talk about everything in totality day one. When you do that, then it becomes very easy. If what you do is talk, first of all, about $39 billion going to the European Union, but completely ignore our desire to have a free trade agreement, the deal becomes unacceptable by definition.
Right, yeah. That's why it failed.
The problem, of course, becomes that that $39 billion, some might say, was not a divorce settlement. It was more money that we'd already agreed to pay.
But Alexis, either way...
You're going to have to let me finish
Andre,
I'm going to make my point, okay, and then you can make yours. Some people might say that the $39 billion that we have agreed to pay was money that we'd already agreed to pay, and we do not want to be seen as a country that does not meet its financial obligations once we have agreed, because, of course, we want to go out into the big wide world and do our own free trade deals. Mm. So if we set a precedent of, you know what, we have a habit of, we might agree to something and then walk away with it from it without giving you a penny, that's not a good precedent to set, is it?
I agree that we do want to do our duty, but remember the House of Lords Committee on European Affairs said that we don't owe them a single penny under Article 50. But in any case, here is the strange thing about it. When we talk about the divorce settlement, the withdrawal agreement, and then the future relationship, the European Union says we cannot talk about the future relationship until we agree the withdrawal agreement. Mm-hmm. By the way, what is the backstop? The backstop is a future relationship. And so isn't it remarkable that we're talking about... Sorry, hang on for a second. We are talking about every single bit about our current relationship, and we're not talking about any future relationship other than the bit the European Union wants. Well, the withdrawal agreement is a going forward future arrangement.
Unfortunately,
and that,
Andre,
should be talked about in the same round.
The backstop is not a future relationship.
Well, it is, it's not in existence now.
But no, it's a guarantee that the Good Friday Agreement will not be respected.
You're splitting hairs.
I'm not splitting hairs.
No, I'm just telling you what it's there for. There is a definition of a future relationship, and that is things that may happen in the future. Clearly, the withdrawal agreement is not the past or the present, ergo it is the future.
Yeah, I don't quite know how you got there.
Alexis, you do accept that a backstop that may kick in 2 years is the future, right? It's not the past or the present.
It's an insurance
to maintain the Good Friday Agreement. Perhaps I didn't make it. Be the voice of reason here. Hang on a second. I think that's unfair. Just because you've misunderstood my point doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to make it.
George is going to have his say now.
It was the worst divorce deal in history. Not only did the other side get to keep the house, the car, the kids, and all the records, for younger viewers, I mean all the music collection, but they got to decide who we could marry in the future. And that no lawyer would ever agree to that kind of divorce deal. They intend to ensure that we can never make any trade agreement with anyone else, never marry anyone else in a way that in any way disadvantages them, which negates the point of having a separate trade deal in the first place. It's not just the backstop. It's the customs union. It's the single market. It's the European Court of Justice. It's how, despite what Theresa May says, how we'll be affected by the so-called free movement of cheap Eastern Central European labour in this new relationship. All of these are reasons why I say that the negotiators have done a very, very bad job. Even I'm one of those who believes they shouldn't have been negotiating in the first place, but they have done a very bad job. Corbyn could not have done a worse job negotiating with these people than the British government has done.
Okay, we're going to have to go to break. I know Andre's gagging to jump in there talk about that point that George just brought up. If you want to take part in the conversation, 0344 499 1000 is the number you need, or you could tweet us at Talk Radio. Don't go away. We'll be straight back after this.
The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conran on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Talk Radio with me, Alexis Conran, here on Talk Radio. Of course, the big debate is here with George Galloway and Andre Walker. We have been talking about the aftermath of Theresa May's vote of confidence, which she, of course, won by 200 votes to 117. We're trying to figure out what her next move will be in regards to the withdrawal agreement. And I think we're sort of coming to an impasse, unless she comes back with something, which, of course, the EU27 have said that they are not prepared to give her, then there's nowhere really left for her to go. We're going to talk more about that, not before we hear from Mark in Watford. Mark, welcome to the show. What would you like to say? Mark, do we have you there? There
if
he is.
If you're thinking about Tory voters tonight, do you really think they would have given Theresa May the benefit of the doubt? And it just goes back to the sort of question where we have this sort of Westminster elite thinking that they know best. I think Tory voters would be really happy to see her go today.
Why do you think you don't mean the parliamentary party, but you mean the average Tory voter would have wanted to see her go? But why do you
Tory
think
members
that?
Also, Alexis? There's a poll now running now in the media that 2/3 of Tory party members want her to go.
63%.
Yeah.
But Mark, what do you think they would like to see instead? So let's say she goes, then what do you have?
Well, I think anyone who's pro-Brexit, which she clearly isn't.
So,
you know, I mean, it doesn't matter, you know. It's like she's just not doing as she said she would in the Tory manifesto.
Because she's not delivering on the Brexit promise. But you see, according to her, and of course I absolutely respect what you're saying, and I can understand the anger of a lot of Leave voters who just want this to be over and done with. They want the result of the referendum to be respected, which, to be fair to her, that's according to her, and we've got to give her the benefit of the doubt, she is trying to deliver. What I think she's trying to say to the nation is, this is what Brexit looks like. And, of course, I'm sure we're going to have this debate.
It's not what people voted for, though, is it?
Well, again, forgive me if I have to point out that we don't really have a consensus of what 17.5 million people voted for. I know a lot of people won't agree with this, but all I can say to you is that if you look at the vote today in the Conservative Party, even the Conservative Party amongst themselves cannot agree what Brexit looks like.
Well, most of them are on the payroll anyway, aren't they? So that's not a true reflection.
Well, you still have 200 Conservative MPs who have voted to keep her in place.
Of which 117 voted for her to go.
Isn't there another dimension, though, Alexis? It's not really connected to Brexit. If I was a Tory, which of course I'm not, if I was a Tory MP, which of course I'm not, nor will I ever be, I'd be wanting a leader that had at least a racing chance of winning the next general election and keeping me in my seat. Now, surely there are not many Tories in the country who think that's the best vote winner I could possibly have, Theresa May. She's damaged goods, she's robotic, she is utterly uncharismatic, she can't deal with people, she can't even deal with the media, everything is hand-picked. If you chose somebody, and I'm arguing something I hope doesn't happen, if you chose someone like Boris Johnson, you would at least have a racing chance of actually pulling something out of the bag, because he can do all of those things.
And isn't the hilarious thing? The hilarious thing was, at the 1922 committee, the very first thing Theresa May said in response to a question was, effectively, don't worry, I won't lead us into the next general election. If your number one selling point as Prime Minister
is
that you're
definitely
going to go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bit depressing, isn't it?
But Mark, do you agree with George here? Do you think that someone like Boris Johnson would have done a better job? Let us not forget that we did have Brexiteers in charge. David Davis was in charge for a year and a half. He didn't like notes very much. And after a year and a half, he decided to go.
Didn't didn't agree with the deal because he didn't believe it was delivering Brexit.
But hang on, Mark, he was in charge for a year and a half.
Was he really?
So what was he doing?
Or was Theresa May working him from the back?
Okay.
Civil servant minions were in charge of all sorts of things.
Okay, Mark.
That's what I think.
I take that point. I know Andre's nodding away, and so is George. And a lot of people have said that, oh, well, he wasn't in charge. But here's my question to all of you. If he wasn't in charge, what was he doing for 18 months? Because the thing is, if I was given a job to carry out a task, and I got there, and within 3 months or 2 months, I went, hang on a minute, I'm not in charge here. Other people are making the decisions to which are going to be pinned on me. I don't think I would leave it to 18 months to stand up and go...
Never underestimate the importance of a ministerial Montego or Prius or whatever
it's
else.
It's a Jaguar, I think, these days, George. It's a Jaguar.
I'll tell you what, no disrespect, George, but talking about Montegos, I mean, you're showing your age. But actually,
Andre, what was he doing there for 18 months?
So, look, the question is sensible. What on earth was he doing when he's not in charge of it, when he's got no idea what's going on, when he's not really negotiating? What I've been told privately by, quote-unquote, a source very, very close to him, indeed, take that whichever way you will. Essentially, Ollie Robbins does all the negotiations. Theresa May just... Ollie Robbins agrees with Barnier on everything. Theresa May agrees with everything Ollie Robbins says. And apparently, David Davis has privately told people, I just tried to persuade Theresa May not to do absolutely everything Robbins had been told to do by Barnier. Now, that's...
So he was saying damage control.
Well, I mean, look, also, you make a fair point. 18 months, what a complete joke. He should have given the money and the jag back and resigned earlier.
Two of them in a row. Rab was the same. He was presented with a deal that was not what he expected, so he couldn't go along with it. You may well ask, and you're right to ask, what kind of men are they that are prepared to take the jag, if you insist, and the money and the title, but not actually be doing the job? I certainly wouldn't.
Mark, where do you think the Conservative Party goes from here? Do you think that the grassroots are never going to forgive them?
I think probably, but just another point I want to make as well is that Philip Hammond today, he used the term of those who voted against Theresa May as extremists.
Yeah, I think Andre mentioned that at the top of the show.
I didn't hear that, sorry.
You'll live to regret that. That's a very, very bad thing to say about 117 of your colleagues.
I mean, it's
even Tony Blair didn't say that about me.
Mind you, George, you said that about Labour MPs, didn't you? How many Labour MPs did you accuse of being extremists?
I wasn't the Chancellor.
Yeah, that's a fair
point. Go on, Mark. Do you think they can fix this, the Tory party?
I think it's unlikely, actually. I mean, I think unless there's a fundamental change, and as much as... I just don't think the hardcore Tory voters actually believe in them anymore. You know, when they sort of lived on this manifesto, Brexit means Brexit. It doesn't. You know, it really doesn't. And I think that, you know, I think they're really going to struggle. I mean, George will be disappointed, but I don't think Jeremy Corbyn's the option either. You know, so I think the country's so divided at the moment that it's difficult to know which way we're going, actually.
Not tempted by people's vote, Mark?
No chance.
Shufflers from Waitrose.
Mark, thank you for your call. That was Mark in Watford, who thinks that he was mentioning a poll that both of you have been looking at, that the Tory membership wanted her to go by quite a large...
Almost two-thirds,
a large majority.
Can I just throw this little thing in, Alexis, which I think is absolutely extraordinary. When we're in the lead-up to the meaningful vote, the Conservative Party printed leaflets and sent them to every association office in the country, asking members of the public to write to their MPs demanding that they vote for Theresa May's deal. I mean, you know, activists effectively campaigning against their own MPs. You know,
they spent £100,000 on Facebook.
That was brought up in Parliament today, £100,000.
Absolutely crazy. The big problem is, Theresa May's position is really clear. I will only leave Downing Street if I'm legally obliged to leave Downing Street. And actually, what she doesn't understand is there is a moral obligation under some circumstances. But I've said this on talk radio before. She's got the hide of a rhinoceros. She's just going to keep going, even if it damages the country. At what point does this cease to be charming and just become naked ambition?
Let's move on and take another call. Lizzie has called from Gloucestershire. Welcome to the show, Lizzie. What would you like to say?
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Lizzie.
I wanted to say, don't you think Jeremy Corbyn has played a blinder by
How so?
Leaving the MPs to keep May in place has enabled him, well, the party, to call for a general election later.
OK, I think one thing that maybe some people might be taking for granted is that if he calls for a vote of no confidence in the government, those 117 MPs would vote with Jeremy Corbyn. But I think we've got to be careful of that, don't we, George?
Yeah, I mean, most of them won't. The vast majority of them won't. But you
do you think he's played a blinder like Lizzie said?
I do. I think he's played a blinder up to now, and I support him up to now. That could change on both counts. But up to now, he's got the Tories in complete and total disarray, their government potentially on the point of collapse, and that's the job of the leader of the opposition.
Some might say that the Labour Party itself doesn't project a very unified party.
No, it's put off. It's kicking the can too.
Right. I mean, they seem
eventually
to...
you've got to catch up with the can. You're right.
They seem to be adopting the policy of let's see which way the wind blows and then we'll go for that. All of a sudden, whereas you had categorically the words people's vote or second referendum were absolutely banned from everybody, now you have John McDonnell saying it's an option that's still on the table. Our first option is general election. If we can't get that, then a people's vote is something we will consider.
Corbyn hasn't, though, and he's the leader. So we'll see how far they go on that. But you're right. He has around him a phalanx of people, very, very significant one, including the person you've just mentioned, that are trying to edge him in that direction. Some of us are trying to edge him in a different direction. There's a struggle for the direction of Labour politics. Len McCluskey, the leader of My Union, Unite, was very clear in the newspapers this week that a people's vote would be a very dangerous thing. And I believe it would literally be a dangerous thing, i.e. a danger to social peace in this country. And you see in France what that looks like, and it's not a pretty sight. You've also got Farage coming back onto the battlefield. He's clearly planning some kind of new party. You've got the UKIP lurching ever further to the right, with street fighters being brought in and so on. It's a very dangerous situation, and nobody should underestimate the potential negative consequences of annulling the vote of 17.4 million people.
I fear, actually, that there's been a retrofit here. So, firstly, is the government in disarray? Yes. Is the Conservative Party badly divided? Is there no confidence in the government, whether that be the public, whether that be the Conservative Party, whether that be the House of Commons? All of those are true. But to what extent has Jeremy Corbyn been involved in any of it? Or to what extent has he just been a bystander for which it's happened during his leadership? And I just don't see. So I understand why George is saying all these things have happened, good on Jeremy Corbyn. But actually, I just don't see Jeremy
Corbyn
being
happened,
particularly
you'd all be blaming
involved in any of it. But on the people's vote, my point very simply, and I call it the establishment vote, by the way, the big problem with the people's vote is that nobody who wants Leave to Win are backing a people's vote. It is merely a mechanism for Remain to prevail. And that is the reason why it is so dangerous and toxic, because it is just a way of overruling the previous referendum.
Lizzie, what's your view on a people's vote?
Well, concerning Brexit, that I think that's a separate thing to the movement that's taking place at the moment to displace the Conservatives from government. You know, the battle using Theresa May as leader of the party to get Brexit through is quite different to the question that I asked about Labour's plan to get the Tories out of government. But where Brexit's concerned, I think that everybody is well aware of now the Yellow Vests is going to be full on in Britain. I think 5,000 people have joined the group already, and it only started like 4 hours ago, and it's got 5,000 people in it already. I think that's going to go viral, and I think we're going to see Yellow Vest protests in the UK pretty soon. So I think that will put the emphasis on what we're going to do about Brexit, because
at the moment, it looks like the Tories planned never to leave. They held a referendum, which failed, and the people voted to leave. So they've spent the last 2.5 years making sure that they change the people's minds.
OK. Lizzie, thank you very much for your thoughts. I mean, the truth is, as things stand, we are... I know a lot of people are saying we are looking at a likely general election or a likely people's vote. I think a lot of people would say that's the, exactly the opposite of how things stand, because if you look at where we're at now, a lot of people will say, well, if seeing as the withdrawal agreement stands very little chance of coming through Parliament, legislation is there for us to just leave. Nothing else needs to happen. So the path is set for the UK to drop out on the 29th of March.
Yes, but as a result of the European Court decision last week, Parliament now has the power, buttressed by an amendment moved by Dominic Grieve last week, which mm-hmm. passed. Parliament now has the power to press a pause button and extend the period of Article 50. So there might be a majority in the House of Commons to do that. It would be a major climb.
But, Jones, does someone...
There might be a majority to achieve that.
Does someone have to open that door? Forgive me, yeah. I'm not familiar with that parliamentary procedure, but I believe that even the amendment having passed, Dominic Grieve's amendment, it still cannot be enacted unless the government allows for it to be enacted.
Well, a majority, which would normally be the government, I agree
right.
with you, but nowadays the government doesn't have a majority. So if a majority across the House as a whole could be mustered to vote for a pause could happen. But the pause would have to be of very limited duration, or all the problems with going for a second vote will begin to emerge.
And that's something I want to ask you both, and try to remain calm, as I know that you're both not fans of the people's vote. But I just want to try and put the counter argument. Do you not think that it is... it's slightly sad that we've got to the point where talking about going back to people to get their vote is being talked about in the same breath as there may be troubles. You heard Lizzie there talking about the yellow vests over here. We don't want to aggravate the people. I get a lot of calls on this station saying if that happens, we'll come out to the street. We are talking about exercising democracy. I believe that the gripe most people will have is the fact that in having a second vote, you're effectively annulling the result of the first one. But in these exceptional circumstances, some people might say, seeing as the Parliament cannot get together to decide something, then perhaps the most democratic thing to do is to go back to the people for a vote.
But I think there's a really simple answer to this. So holding a referendum in of itself is clearly an act of democracy, and nobody would disagree with that. I think the issue is, when you came to the Lisbon Treaty, the European Constitution, as it was rebranded, you know, it was defeated in referenda right across Europe, and each time there was a second referendum in order to just overturn the decision the first time. So I think that is what has toxified the idea of a second referendum. And also, remember, you know, people like Tony Blair and Alistair Campbell and all these guys who are coming out for a second referendum, they're not interested in democracy. They're interested in finding a vehicle that can legitimise overturning the previous referendum, and that's what upsets people. So a referendum, everything that you've said about a referendum in of itself is true, but the context makes it untrue.
Yeah, and you can't annul the result of one referendum without having ever implemented the result of that referendum. It would be perfectly valid to say the referendum, which the government said before it happened, would be binding on them, passing the decision to the British people and all the words that were in the official papers for the referendum, and then you don't implement it, you must be able to see the democratic deficit in that, especially when a perfectly democratic alternative exists, namely to have a general election in which the people can have a say, not just on Brexit. Because Lizzie was right about this. There's food banks, there's crisis in the NHS, there's crisis amongst the police, in public sector, workers with their wages frozen, austerity. There's a hundred other issues. And if we're going to have another ballot, let's have a real ballot, and one which doesn't look like it's been fixed by the establishment. And you mentioned some of their names. My goodness, what a grisly crew of Blair and Campbell and all the rest. I'm not going to go off on one, Alexis.
Please don't.
And I know you don't want me to. But the idea that we should have a vote annulled by this crew, and you don't think that's going to cause trouble, it's going to cause a whole mountain of trouble. Best avoided.
Can I ask you guys a question? Because I've often wondered whether Tony Blair is the father of Brexit. And the reason I say that is because here is the guy who was hugely supportive of the European Constitution. He promised the referendum. Now, admittedly, the referendum didn't happen under Gordon Brown, but it's the same government in many respects. He was the person who tried to force through the euro. And I think that toxicity towards the European Union kind of started under Tony Blair. So I've often thought that he is, if you like, I can't use the B word on air, but he is the B grandfather of Brexit. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, I like to blame Tony Blair for everything, but I can't blame him for that. And believe me, that takes some doing to force me to admit that. I'm the only person here, probably in this entire building, old enough to have been a fighter in the first referendum in 1975. And all the arguments that were made by the Labour leaders at that time, Peter Shore, Michael Foot, Barbara Castle, big luminaries of the left against the European Union, are exactly the same arguments that I make in my meetings and in my talks today. So we never changed. There was always a toxicity about the European Union from the point of view of people like me, and it never went away. So I agree with you to this extent. Blair and his successors, including Brown, added to the disrespect that the public hold for the political class. And so when you got a referendum where John Major, Tony Blair and Nick Clegg are, and David Cameron, remember him, are out walking...
in a shed somewhere.
Yeah, are out walking the streets of Britain but only surrounded by security men, calling on you to vote for something, chances are most people in the country are going to vote the other way.
It would be rude of me not to answer your question. So very quickly before we go to break, I think some people may say that the austerity that has been forced and the UN report came out and regarded it as a political choice by the last Tory government. Some people may say that that was to blame for Brexit, and perhaps decades full of right-wing press lambasting the EU from everything from hair dryers to bendy bananas and immigrants. So I suppose There could be a myriad of things that you could point Brexit to. We'll take a quick break, but we do still want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need, or you could tweet us at Talk Radio.
The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conran on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Great Debate here on Talk Radio. Now, Andre Walker is with me and George Galloway. Thanks for all your texts, your tweets and your calls. We will be getting to those right after the news, but keep them coming. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need, or you can tweet us at Talk Radio. Now, we are going to speak to Bog Blackman, MP and Conservative MP for Harrow East. Welcome to the show, Mr. Blackman.
Good evening.
Good evening. Of course, we need to get a reaction from you from today's events. Are you pleased to see Theresa May survive the vote?
Well, I think she got more. Well, she got 200 votes from the party. And I think that is a pretty strong recommendation, given that we'd had a lot of forecasts before the weekend or at the weekend that more than 100 colleagues were opposing her proposals for leaving the European Union. And I think what it does do is send a very strong signal to the European Union colleagues that she's going to be consulting with over the next few days, that actually the arrangements that she's come to, the deal as stands, does not stand a hope in hell of getting through Parliament. And it's very important that we actually get clarity on how we leave the so-called backstop arrangements, and that we have the capability in law to unilaterally leave that backstop and actually be an independent nation once again.
So do you think that from what we've heard already from the EU27, we've had Mr. Juncker, Mr. Tusk saying they'd love to help Theresa May in any way they can, but I don't believe any of them have said that the backstop is up for negotiation. Do you think that this result today changes things?
No, I think it does, because it sends a very strong signal to say that the deal as proposed will not go through Parliament, and therefore the strong likelihood is that we would leave a position whereby there will be no deal, and therefore we'll still leave the European Union on the 29th of March, but the European Union won't get its £39 billion as promised, and we will be then in a position whereby we'll negotiate from a position of strength on the future trade arrangements with our European Union colleagues. And I do think it's important that what the Prime Minister said, I think, to the Conservative Party tonight, and also will be saying to her counterparts in the European Union, is we need to have a legally enforceable position whereby if we get into the backstop, and that's a big if, then we have to be able to get out of that backstop in a unilateral fashion, and it must be legally enforceable that we can do that. Now, the way to do this is, if they won't open the withdrawal agreement again, which most of us would prefer that they did, there has to be a codicil that is legally enforceable that says that if the discussions and debate on the future arrangements are not going as we would wish, then we will have the right to walk away. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. And if that happens, my prediction is that actually Parliament will accept that.
Well, I think there's a slight problem here, which is that... firstly, what Bob Blackman's saying is a fair comment. That is to say that clearly there can be a legal arrangement between the British government and the European Union separate from the withdrawal agreement, which clarifies things. However, Jacob Rees-Mogg and the ERG have already stated that this is not their only problem with the agreement. The Northern Irish are already saying, the DUP are already saying, that is not their only problem with the agreement. I think that Theresa May agrees with Bob Blackman and says, look, if we get this clarification, we're good to go. I'm not sure necessarily that this deal passes even then.
Yeah, but Bob, George Galloway here. If my auntie had a beard, she'd be my uncle. The suppositions you posit for the European Union leaders agreeing are fantasy. They're not going to agree to any of that because they, and the Irish government in particular, and I've got no problem with this backstop, as I agreed earlier. I'm in favour of Irish unity, and it's brought more close by these events. But you and others in the Conservative and Unionist Party, for you, it means a very great deal. I know that, and quite sincerely. But the European Union are never going to agree to that. So I don't see how you get this agreement through the House of Commons, even on that limited point. But as Andrew just said, there are many, many other points, from fish to future relations with other countries, trade deals with other countries and so on. I described it as a divorce deal in which she gets to keep the house, the car, the kids, the record collection, and gets the right to decide whether you can marry somebody else several years down the line. And that's a very bad divorce deal that nobody in their right mind would agree to.
Yeah, but that's exactly my point, that basically if we get to the point of... I mean, I think most of us could say, look, we understand we're going to have this transition period when the free trade agreement that is being talked about is negotiated. And if we can't get the agreement to that within that time frame, i.e. by the 31st of December 2020, then the risk is that we're going to the backstop. Now, the big sticking point for most people, I think, at this stage is that once we're into the backstop, there is no way of ending that unless the European Union say, yes, it's OK for you guys to go. Now, that is clearly and utterly unacceptable. And will not pass the House of Commons. We know that. I think the other interesting thing
I'm sorry to interrupt. I do have to take the news, but do stay with us and we'll pick this up after the news.
Across the UK, online and on DAB Digital Radio, The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conrad.
Order!
On Talk Radio.
Welcome back to The Big Debate with you all the way up till 1 o'clock tonight with George Galloway and Andre Walker. And joining us, very kindly, he agreed to stay on the line, is Bob Blackman, MP, Conservative MP for Harrow East. Bob, we were saying what is going to happen next with the withdrawal agreement. I think we've all pretty much agreed that whatever she gets back on the backstop is not going to be enough for Mr. Rees-Mogg, who's already said he just wants to see it out of the withdrawal agreement completely. So what is going to happen to Theresa May's deal if it gets voted down? How do you see that unfolding?
Well, I think the first thing will obviously be that the DUP are crucial in any votes in Parliament. And the first thing has to be that whatever deal Theresa May comes back with from Brussels and various different lobbying has to pass what the DUP want to see for the Northern Ireland and the Irish border. That's the first thing that has to happen. Then colleagues are going to have to say, look, you know, where do we stand in this? There are risks involved in all of this. And the first and most important risk is that those of us that are passionate Brexiteers want us to be an independent nation once again, take the view that we want to see Britain flourishing and growing outside the European Union. Now, the risk is if we get a deal that we can all live with, and you know, it's never going to be perfect. I think that's the key point. If we've got a deal that that actually is in that position, and if we have this backstop that really no one wants us to get into, but we have the power to walk away if the trade agreement is not in place and the negotiations are not going well, then we have to say to colleagues, look, it could be either this or halting Brexit altogether. Because in the House of Commons, there's this position whereby right across the House, I mean, you've got the Labour Party that just wants to cause chaos and force a general election, the SNP that have never wanted us to leave the European Union in the first place, and then the Liberal Democrats that are a Europhile party that just want us to be part of the United States of Europe. So we face all these enemies, and I think we've got to face them down. Because those of us that want to see Britain thrive outside the European Union have got to demonstrate that there's a deal and it's workable and it will deliver what the British people voted for in 2016.
But what if that doesn't happen, Bob? What happens then? Is I think what
well,
Alexis
I mean,
was
clearly,
asking.
I mean, well, clearly the position then is the clock ticks down. The government have to come back by the 21st of January, and then we've got to look at what the deal is by then. And of course, we're then ticking down to the 29th of March. Now, I suspect, you know, we'll get to a position whereby the time for negotiation is over, at which point a decision is then going to have to be reached on do we leave the European Union without a deal or a managed no deal, i.e. we agree amongst, together with the European Union, the process by which we are leaving, but we don't have any commitment to the future arrangements, which is not the ideal position to be in, because we do want to do trade and have a good working relationship with our European Union colleagues.
But Bob, very importantly,
we've got to have the capacity to set up international trade deals of our own. And that's the vital part of the economic case for leaving the European Union.
Bob, isn't this what the cynics are talking about, which is that Theresa May is not going to do what George Galloway asked for, not going to do what Jeremy Corbyn asked for, not going to do what the ERG asked for, which is vote on the deal next week. She's going to leave it until January. And actually, the purpose of this international tour is not really to renegotiate the deal. It's actually just to run down the clock, because she says, and I think it's legitimate that she says this, if they do not make this agreement by the 29th of January, there is not the parliamentary time to pass it.
21st of January.
21st of January. Yeah, 21st. There is not the parliamentary time. Isn't she just running down the clock to hold a gun to your head to vote for the deal, no matter how heinous it is?
No, because I think the most important thing is that she's going to go to... I mean, she made the commitment today, and I think, you know, you've got to take commitments at face value, that she's going to go and negotiate a deal that ensures we have the legal right to leave the backstop on a unilateral basis if we're not getting to the point of a free trade deal, which is what we want going forward in the future. Bear in mind, we want to trade with the European Union on a free trade basis. We also want to trade with the rest of the world on a free trade basis.
Which we do already, Mr. Blackman. But let's
state facts as they are. What you need to understand, hang on a minute. You need to understand, we cannot do international trade deals.
Yes, no. You said you wanted to trade with the rest of the world. I was just merely pointing out that we do already trade with the rest of the world.
Under EU rules.
Yes, but the fact is we do still trade with the rest of the world. Yeah. Mr. Blackman, Andre, I think, is making the point there, and I don't wish to put words in your mouth, but that MPs are going to be left with a choice of my deal or no deal. Do you think, is it conceivable that the UK Parliament, as it stands at the moment, will allow no deal to happen?
Well, the interesting thing is that the legal position, and this is a very important aspect in this whole process, the legal position is that we leave the European Union on the 29th of March and pass through the Withdrawal Act. So the only people that can bring forward legislation are the government to change that. So the current position is if the government doesn't bring forward proposals to change that, we leave the European Union without a deal. Mm-hmm. And that's the position that we are in legally. Now, of course, Parliament will try all sorts of devices to try and alter that. But what we've done today is give Theresa May breathing space now to go and renegotiate the deal. She knows the strength of opposition against her within the party and the level of mistrust there is for the European Union. And therefore, she's got to go back to her colleagues in the European Union and say, look, if you do not come up with this deal, then the likelihood is we're going to walk away and you won't get your money and we won't have a free trade deal and we'll be talking again in March, about where we go.
And Mr. Blackman, final question before we move on. If we are looking at no deal in the face, being a responsible MP and, of course, being in Parliament to protect the good lives of your constituents and the rest of the country, do you think this government has done enough to prepare for no deal? Are we ready for no deal?
Well, clearly the preparations for no deal have to be stepped up in the next few weeks and months.
I mean, we're talking about 3.5 months left, right?
Yeah, the reality is that, you know, funny enough, lots of, as you've said yourself, the whole world trades with the European Union without having a free trade deal, and we could do the same.
People trade with the European Union without having a free trade deal?
Correct.
Under WTO rules.
Most countries do, yes.
People do trade with the EU, but nobody trades under just WTO rules.
America does.
No, America's got added trade agreements with the EU. They don't just trade just on WTO rules.
Isn't there another very simple solution to this?
I find that quite shocking, actually, that an MP...
Because actually, right, if you think about this, what is the big problem with the backstop? The big problem with the EU and whatever, and these negotiations is we've not talked about future trading relations. You know what you could spend the next 3.5 months doing? Talk about the free trade deal. Take Canada's free trade deal, bolt on a few extras and agree the lot. Because I have to say to you, you know, this withdrawal agreement becomes entirely irrelevant if the future free trade deal is on the table already. And
absolutely
I think that potentially
right.
is a way out.
Okay. Bob Blackman, MP, thank you very much for your time. Really do appreciate it at this late hour. That's Bob Blackman, MP, Conservative MP for Harrow East. We are going to take a quick break, but we want to hear from you. 03444991000 is the number you need, or you could tweet us at Talk Radio.
The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker, and Alexis Conran on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Now we are going to speak to the chairman of the Bow Group. This is Ben Harris Quinney. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Post the vote of Theresa May, which it did win by 200 votes to 117. Where does the Conservative Party go from here?
I think it's very difficult for the Conservative Party to find any cohesive way forward. I think what you've basically got now is two parties within one. You've got those 117 and maybe a few more who will not support Theresa May's proposed deal or anything like it. And then you've got the bloc of loyalists who will go along to get along, maybe with a few Remainers thrown in. And I think post the vote, because there can't be another vote of no confidence in her now for a year, things that would normally be taken as red, like passing the finance bill, which is coming up next week, like passing key votes, is not something the leader of the Conservative Party and the Prime Minister can now rely on a very significant proportion of her party to now do. And I think it's important to point out that that vote constituted, the vote against her constituted 80% of backbench Tory MPs. So there were actually very few people that backed her that are not on her payroll. So it's whilst she's won, it is really a very weak endorsement of her leadership.
Well, that's as may be, but she did win, and she did get a bigger majority than most people thought she would. But would you say that the Conservative Party at the moment, being faced with what we've been talking about with George and Andre here, which, of course, the next big step is the withdrawal agreement, it seems that which way we've talked about it this evening, you're going to get to the point where the withdrawal agreement does not pass in Parliament, and what happens next? Would you think that the Conservative Party would be confident in going into a general election with Theresa May at the helm, even though she has said that she's not planning to fight the next general election? That might not apply to a general election that's been called a snap general election.
It might not. And I think, quite frankly, if she did lead the Conservative Party into a snap general election or any election that occurs before 2022, which is the ceiling date that she's put on leaving, I think the Conservative Party would lose to Jeremy Corbyn. I think Theresa May is a hard-working lady, but she is not an effective politician. To be an effective politician, you need to show leadership credentials, you need to take people along with you, you need to inspire people, you need to demonstrate a vision. And Theresa May has been unable to do that in the time that she has been in office. And in terms of the scenario now for the Conservative Party and for Parliament as a whole, I think we're looking at a no-deal Brexit. I am not as enthusiastic about a no-deal Brexit as many Brexiteers are, and the reason why we in the Bow Group called for a leadership challenge to Theresa May to take place was because if another leader came in, we just might have enough time. We called for it three and a half weeks ago now. If a new leader came in, there might have just been enough time to negotiate a Canada triple plus type arrangement, the like of which the Brexiteers support and there seems to be support for in Europe. Now it's May's deal, which there is no majority for in Parliament, or no deal. And I think it's no deal we're headed for.
I'm not a Conservative, obviously.
But, you don't have to say that.
If I were, I would have said that the party missed a trick tonight. They missed a real chance to ditch someone who has no empathy, is widely regarded as robotic, is a very poor campaigner, as throwing away the government's majority last year, she demonstrated. And they could have replaced her with a vote winner, or at least someone that could hold the tide. And they've now lost that opportunity. If there is a general election early, which there may very well be, she will be your leader in that general election. And as you said, she'd very likely lose it. I'm looking at the front pages today. I think the most damaging one is The Times, which correctly describes the situation. May scrapes home in a rather forlorn-looking picture. You know, sometimes they say a budget doesn't really look as good the next day or the day after that. Do you think Theresa May's victory tonight will not look as good tomorrow or the day after that?
Well, you compare it, as most people have, to what happened with Thatcher. when she faced a similar no-confidence vote in her leadership, which, again, she actually won.
And she got 204 votes.
She did. I mean, the parliamentary arithmetic was slightly different, but without going into all that, you know, it was very much a Pyrrhic victory. There were sophologists that were saying, well, technically you can win this, but the view was that so damaged was her leadership, so damaged was her authority over the party, that there was no way to really move forward with her as leader, as a lot of her advisers and she herself saw it. And I think that is the same situation for Theresa May. We keep hearing that Theresa May is a stubborn woman and you know, that is a fantastic thing. But it's not always a fantastic thing if this person is being stubborn and effectively holding up the country's possibilities just because they refuse to acknowledge the reality of the political situation.
But, Ben, one of the things that really, really struck me, if you think about it, Margaret Thatcher did better than John Major, and yet John Major was able to continue and Margaret Thatcher, obviously left office. And one of the things that was often said about the difference between Major and Thatcher was that Major, when the result was announced, had all of his people out on College Green, spinning it as a great victory. It really struck me in terms of the misfire that tonight, once again, if you turn on the TV, turn on the radio, you listen to talk radio, you know, it's all the Remainers, all the May loyalists who are out and about doing the spinning. It's not the ERG people. Jacob Rees-Mogg, okay, he appeared on a couple of TV channels, but his senior lieutenants aren't anywhere to be seen. Boris went home after he voted.
On his bike.
Yeah, that's right. Isn't part of the problem here, Ben, that actually the malcontents, the ERG, just never get the politics of these things right?
I think there's a lot of truth in that, and I think the reason there is, particularly with this vote, a lot of truth in that, is that the general public don't really understand what's going on. They don't understand what the 1922 committee is. They don't understand all this men and, you know, now women in grey suits that make all these decisions behind the scenes. And the fact that, you know, a couple of hundred people can determine the future of a whole nation in this way. And, you know, we in the Bow Group have been campaigning for complete democratisation of the Conservative Party. So there is some accountability. But because it's so unclear how this process works, you can pretty much get away with spinning it in whatever direction you want to, if you've got the resources to do so, which the government obviously does have.
Well, in that case, can I just jump in there and say to you, if you're campaigning for democracy within the Conservative Party, and we're asking the question, you know, where does the Conservative Party go from here? Isn't now the issue that you and I are faced with as two Conservatives, that surely the big thing about the Parliamentary Party, if and when Theresa May goes, the number one thing they will try and do is prevent Boris being one of the two final candidates that are put to the Conservative Party membership. And the reason they'll do that is because they know the Conservative Party membership would vote for him to be Prime Minister?
Yeah, I think they would vote for him, or they would vote for a Jacob Rees-Mogg, or they might vote for a David Davis, but they certainly wouldn't vote for anyone like Theresa May. And the polling that we have done over the years, going right back to when there was the leadership challenge in David Cameron stepped down in 2016, showed that May only ever enjoyed a maximum of 20% support among the membership.
Yeah.
So, frankly, Andrea Leadsom, and many people have criticised Andrea Leadsom's candidacy and her campaign and all the rest of it, but she would have beat May from pretty much everything I have seen. So you've got this curious situation where someone can rise to the rank of Prime Minister, and I have particular difficulty explaining this to Americans, and they don't really have any base of support anywhere in the country.
She did win the 60% of the vote in the second round, the second ballot, which saw Andrea Leadsom withdraw. I'm not quite certain where you get the impression that Andrea Leadsom would have beaten her.
Right.
There was a vote and she lost.
What Andre's saying, and the reason that she didn't get 60% of Conservative Party members, she got 60% of members of Parliament.
Sure.
So in other parties, it's the membership, the whole membership, that decides who the leader's going to be.
Just like the Labour Party.
Not just a collection of 300 people.
Sure.
And so what Andre's saying is, it's obvious that a candidate like Boris Johnson, from all polling, universal polling on this, doesn't matter what polling company you use, if you look at Conservative Party members and ask them who they want the next leader to be, they will pick a Brexiteer. And the person that comes top may be Jacob Rees-Mogg, maybe Boris Johnson, maybe David Davis, but it won't be anyone that falls within that centrist May circle. But what Andre's saying is, generally, the system works so the members are not allowed that choice. So it's all decided, like it's been decided tonight, like it was decided in 2016, and like it's often decided, by a few hundred people in a room. And that's what's dictating the future of our nation. I think in a modern democracy, that's simply unacceptable. And there'll be a lot of people sitting at home saying, I just don't understand what's going on.
Well, Ben, last question before we go to a break. You mentioned earlier that she fails to understand the political reality. The political reality is the Conservative Party have the way they're working. They had a vote, just like some may say the referendum vote. OK, I appreciate it. This is just the MPs voting. It's not the grassroots of the party. But there was a vote. She won it. The political reality also is there is no majority in the House of Parliament for a no-deal Brexit. She's simply doing what she can for the good of the country whilst trying to honour the referendum. Maybe the political reality is this is what Brexit looks like.
Well, I have no ill will against Theresa May personally, and I also don't doubt that she feels that she is doing what is best for the country. I doubt her abilities and her traits as a leader to be able to get a better deal than the one that she has come back with. And I think, you know, a more committed Brexiteer.
But you had two committed Brexiteers in charge, Ben. You had David Davis. You can't get more committed than David Davis.
No, but he wasn't.
And then you had Dominic Raab.
No. But if you look at what... Dominic Raab didn't even know what the deal was, and he was Brexit Secretary. So these guys were completely short-circuited. May wasn't informing them. And you can read everything that they've written and said that they didn't know what was going on.
So what was David Davis doing for 18 months? If he wasn't in charge, what was he pretending to do to the British public? He was a Secretary of State. What was he doing?
I think he was doing what he could, but there was clearly key bits of information which were being kept from him because, you know, the Prime Minister obviously...
And was he aware of this or was he not aware of this?
According to him, he was latterly aware of it.
So if he was aware of it, why didn't he resign sooner?
Well, I think he felt that he could better influence things from inside the tent rather than outside. But obviously it reached a point with Chequers where he felt that he could no longer go along with it. And Dominic Raab was the same way. The Dominic Raab situation was even more bizarre because it seemed to be a total shock to Dominic Raab, the content of the
I believe there was
agreement.
Some content that he hadn't been privy to that just magically appeared. But that's one of the stories I've heard.
I think that was a mistake for Theresa May to short-circuit other members of her cabinet, and particularly the Brexit Secretary, who should have been involved in all aspects of it. So that's the way she's chosen to run things. But I think the point is that the political reality is now looking like a no-deal Brexit because, as Bob Blackman said, if there is no deal, if there is no settlement by March 29th, we drop out of the EU automatically. There is no more money that will flow to the EU, and I very much doubt that Parliament would get a bill to pay more money to the EU through, certainly not through the Conservative Party, and I think Labour would rather see the government fail than to pass legislation to send more money to the EU. So I think we're now heading towards that cliff edge because there is now not time for an alternative leader or anyone else to come in and offer a different vision. And I think that's a great shame for the country, but we are where we are. And my advice to the government would be start preparing for a no-deal scenario.
OK, Ben Harris. Quinny, thank you very much. That's chairman of the Bow Group. We'll take a quick break and then we're going to get back to your calls. 0344 499 1000 is the number you need. You could tweet at Talk Radio.
The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker and Alexis Conran on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Myself, Alexis Conran, Andre Walker and George Galloway here with you for the next half an hour. Now let's go to Leeds where Kasif is waiting to speak to us. Kasif, welcome to the show, my friend. What would you like to say?
Yes, hello to everybody.
Hello.
I would like to say quite simply, it's not in the European Union's interest to offer our country a free trade agreement. That is because our corporation tax is lower than theirs, Of course, our corporation tax is 19%. In Germany, it's 30-something percent. In France, it's 30-something percent. And then we would negotiate free trade deals with America, with Canada, with all of the Commonwealth nations and other nations. Thus, why would companies wish to remain in Germany and France, where they do not have access to all these free trade agreements? And, of course, they wouldn't want to move to the UK, where we have free trade agreements, not only with Europe, but with the rest of the world, and on top of that, less corporation tax. So it's not in their interest to offer the free trade agreement.
George?
Well, look, the European Union is in very severe difficulties almost right across its borders. You have countries like Hungary and Poland that are increasingly going their own way on issues, for example, of immigration, migration, refugees, and so on. The Italian government is at loggerheads with the EU and now under heavy manners to rewrite its budget, as earlier both Spain and Portugal had to do. The EU bureaucracy and leadership has its hands full. Macron is in the state he's in, as we discussed earlier in the show. I'm not sure that the European Union that we knew is still going to exist in years to come, perhaps in the period in which this future arrangement is still being discussed. I don't know whether we can get a free trade deal independently with them. I'm content to trade with them under WTO rules. It's my belief that they would be more worried about that than us, and would seek at the 11th hour some special relationship with us. I'm concerned that we get back control over our own politics, our own law, our own borders, and our own trading relationships with the rest of the world. Theresa May's deal doesn't achieve any of that. It fails spectacularly on all of that. And I don't believe for 1 minute that there's any deal she's going to come back with from this current tour that's going to make that any more acceptable.
Isn't part of the issue that you raise, actually, that the European Union is concerned about kind of what I'm going to call offshoring, which is, if you think about it, I am a constitutional conservative, and that's why I'm a Brexiteer. But actually, the right wing, the economically right wing argument in favour of Brexit is this. What you do is you pull out the European Union, you drop your tariffs, you reduce your taxes, and you cut regulation massively. And what that does is that makes you the most competitive part of Europe, or the most competitive economy. Now, of course, George will be spinning about this because it does involve reducing employment rights and all those things that exist across the rest of the European Union. But I think there are concerns by the EU that that is precisely what we plan to do. And frankly, as far as I'm concerned, I think it is something that we should do. We should be getting in there and making ourselves competitive. But obviously, you know, if you are a centre-left government like the European Union is, to have something that is that radically right wing is offensive, I would suggest.
Kasip, thank you for your call. George, do you think that Andre's suggestion that we basically,
become a pound shop,
race to the bottom?
Well, yeah. Race to the bottom.
Of course,
just,
I reject
just
it entirely.
Try and make as much money as possible.
I reject it entirely, except in this one regard. I want Britain to be the kind of country Britain decides to be. I want Britain to have the power to have an economy like Jeremy Corbyn wants, and I want one that can, for example, intervene with state aid to protect our strategic industries, like steel, for example, which went down the Swanee because we were not allowed to intervene to save it.
We did that with the banks, right? Though?
Yeah, that's the point you keep making, and that makes my point even stronger. We're allowed to save banks because the EU is a banker's ramp. But when we tried even to raise the demand to save the steel industry, we got short shrift. We were told you cannot intervene. We're told that every service that you offer must go to compulsory competitive tendering. And if Richard Branson, other brands are available, tenders lower than British Railways. It's got to go to Richard Branson.
I must admit, this is where I've got loads of sympathy for George Galloway, because I absolutely loathe the idea of bailing out any business, including the banks. I would have let them fail. It doesn't bother me at all. I think, frankly, the idea that you can make a £1 million bonus 1 year and then the bank fail the next year and you keep your £1 million bonus. However, it is true to say that these rules on state aid mean that if you go to the ballot box and you vote for the kind of country that George Galloway is advocating, you cannot have it, whichever way you vote.
What confuses me is when you do look across to the EU, for example, I don't understand how both of you could explain to me how Germany, for example, has nationalised railways. And they are open to private companies.
They had them before the rules of the single market.
No. A recent contract was put out to tender both to private companies and state companies, and Deutsche Bahn won the contract above and beyond the private companies.
And if it had lost it, it would have gone to the private company.
But it didn't, George. What you're telling me, or what you're giving me to understand, and perhaps I'm misunderstanding, is you're telling me that if you're part of the EU, those kind of measures, those one would say socialist measures of bringing railways back to the people, of protecting your steel industry, are impossible. And yet I keep finding examples where those things can happen within the EU.
Hang on, I would like George to answer.
The example you gave me proves my point.
That
Deutsche Bahn had to compete with private bidders. Now, I believe in an economy where we, as a democratically elected government, can decide. We think our railways should be in public ownership. Whether Richard Branson can cobble together a proposal that beats our tender or not. I believe that we should have the democratic right to run a deficit on our budget, to kickstart our economy, to intervene to protect strategic parts of our economy without anybody else that we didn't elect and cannot remove telling us that we cannot do so.
But then wouldn't someone like Andre perhaps say that that's anti-competitive?
Yes, totally. So I am absolutely opposed, and I would campaign long and hard. And when George Galloway, by the way, suggested nationalising Woolworths, I thought it was the most ridiculous idea I'd ever heard. I strongly disagreed with it. What I didn't disagree with was his right to do it if he was elected on that manifesto. And by the way, the EU effectively sets out four criteria for state aid under Article 107 of the 2007 treaty. What it says is, if it is granted by a state or through state resources, if it favours certain undertakings or production of certain goods, if it distorts or threatens to distort competition, and if it affects trade between member states, it is illegal.
Yeah, but now, this is where the European Union.
But if you
this
were to,
is where the European Union can contradict itself.
Well,
because
they do break their own rules.
But if you were to list
those things back to yourself again, voters where I come from in Lee in Lancashire, voters in Glasgow, voters in inner city Liverpool, they are electing members of Parliament to do that.
Sure, but
right,
exactly.
That's exactly
but also,
what
you
they want
pick,
them to do.
You know, and we can all cherry pick. I could give you Part 7, Article 345. Of the Treaty of the Functional European Union. It says the treaties shall in no way prejudice the rules in member states governing the system of property ownership. So they contradict themselves. But that
means you can't nationalise somebody's property without good reason.
You can't give the East Coast Main Line to a state railway if a private bidder is offering to run the East Coast Main Line more cheaply.
Well, yeah, but you know what? The Berlin S-Bahn put the price of running their S-Bahn, which is their overground, the equivalent to the overground in London, so high that they priced out all of the private bidders, and it went to Deutsche Bahn, which is the nationalised bidder. They do bend their rules the other way. All I'm saying is state ownership is still possible. But listen, let me move on to Robert, because he's been patiently waiting. Robert, who's called us from London. Welcome to the show, Robert. What would you like to say?
Hey, you. Quick question. I'm against a no-deal Brexit, but I'm also against the second referendum. However, a lot of these People's Vote Brigade are willing, and I'm sort of pro-Brexit, a lot of these People's Vote Brigade are willing to risk no deal against Remain. So my question to you lot is, are the People's Vote campaigns also extremists? Because you've got people there who within the Labour Party call people like Corbyn, they say Corbyn's not moderate. I think the most extremist thing I can imagine anyone doing is what I've heard people like Blair and Amuna and Campbell say, is that they're willing to risk a no-deal Brexit just to stay in the European Union.
It does. It has to be said, it is a weird thing for me as a die-in-the-wall Brexiteer that my view, which is reject the deal, is also supported by people who wish to remain in the European Union. And it does worry me that that trajectory is kind of binary. Either we win or they win.
That's the false dichotomy they wish to create. They wish to the polarisation to be between no deal or no Brexit. Mm-hmm. And the best way of winning that argument is to make it as unpleasant as possible for us to leave the European Union. And they've spent millions of pounds, much of it from foreign sources, in building a movement controlled by Tony Blair, staffed by Blairites, and they've gotten us to a situation where now that might very well be okay. The dichotomy we reach.
I know the answer I'm going to get, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Okay. So I'll start with you, Robert, and then I'll move on to these fine gentlemen in front of me. The dangers of no deal, I take it that when you hear industry warning against no deal, when you have the council down in Dover warning about people not being able to get to their work, about the queues of the lorries, I take it that you look at all this thinking Project Fear, all these people who are so-called experts at running their own business, Project Fear, I know better, we're all going to be fine.
Well, no, to a degree, I would say if they'd planned for it, I would agree. I would say this is just Project Fear, but they clearly haven't. So therefore, they've sort of, in some ways, their lack of preparation to sort of blackmail people into this. And I take it quite seriously that if there was to be a no deal now, it'd be so much chaos for the next 2-3 months that the sort of consequences of that would be quite serious.
Okay.
Well, I think Theresa May deliberately didn't prepare for a no deal Brexit. Precisely so that it will look all the more dramatic.
But haven't we spent a long time negotiating which bits of the European Union we leave? And actually, I voted to leave the lot. I think it becomes really easy if you just say, we're leaving all of it.
Trouble is, and I know you will disagree, and I know we want to move on to the next call, but it really does ring true that not everybody voted for the same thing. I get calls on this station all the time. Some people say, I didn't vote for the economy, I voted for sovereignty. Some people voted to stop free movement of people. Some people voted because they feel that the economy will be better off. So it's very difficult to pin.
None of these things were on the ballot paper, Alexis. The ballot paper said, do you want to leave the European Union or do you want to remain in the European Union?
Yes, but the people
and
who
the majority
sold,
voted
but,
to
but,
leave.
Hang on, sure, but the people who sold...
They didn't vote to leave if... But
okay, but the people who sold the vote, Leave vote,
which people you mean?
Well, exactly. Well, how do I know that you've been listening to the same people I've been listening to?
I sold the vote in rather a different way. I didn't go around in a bus saying you'll get $350 million for the NHS.
Yes, but George, you might not have, but somebody else might have seen that.
Well,
and
they might have,
vote
but
for that.
That happens
Where's
in every
my
election.
Money?
In every election, the people that you lose to, you accuse of misleading the voters, cheating the voters, you'll never deliver.
So you're saying
and
none of the leavers misled the voters?
Leavers did and remainers did.
But I believe in the
good sense of the British people. And I've got no choice other than to do that because there was an election, we won, and those that lost have never accepted it and have done everything they could in the media, in the deep state, in Parliament, in the Canary Wharf, amongst the bankers and all the rest. They have been conspiring from minute one to bring about as difficult an exit for us as is possible.
And actually, what I find grotesque is the way that they have toxified the political process. They have said voters are stupid and should be ignored, and that, you know, it was all the Russians, it's all foreign spies or whatever it is. Look, I think it's really simple. Well, I used to be a member of the Scouts. When I left the Scouts, they did not say to me, well, thank you for leaving, but you've still got to pay for the Scout Hut for the next 10 years, and you've got to attend the annual Jamboree. I just left. Right, that was it. And I think now the process has become extremely complicated because people have deliberately made it complicated. But that's not the really dangerous bit. As I say, the really dangerous bit is when you say, we do not agree with this result, therefore we say it is invalid. We say it is traduced. We say it has been hacked. We say it has been rigged. We say it's dodgy. Remember, Tony Blair et al. Are fundamentally saying that elections in this country cannot be trusted. And they're saying it for no better reason than they simply disagree with the result. There is nothing wrong with that referendum result other than Tony Blair doesn't agree with it.
I think it's not just Tony Blair who doesn't agree with it, but I understand your point. Thank you for that. We're going to have a quick break, and then we've got just 15 minutes left till 1 o'clock. It's flown by. Thank you for all your texts, your tweets, and your calls. Keep them coming in. We might be able to fit one more in. 0344-499-1000 is the number you need. We'll be straight back after this.
The Great Debate with George Galloway, Andre Walker, and Alexis Conran on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to The Great Debate with me, Alexis Conran, here on Talk Radio. With me, I have Andre Walker and George Galloway. Let's take a quick call, actually, before we go to the papers, and they are brutal. Let's take Ken from Newcastle. Welcome to the show, Ken. What would you like to say?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm enjoying your discussion. It's very interesting. Just a couple of quick points. This is just my opinion. I've read many viewpoints from many financial and economic experts, and they have gave many grave warnings of economic and possible financial catastrophe if we have a no-deal Brexit. Now, if we have a no-deal Brexit, it could possibly result in economic and financial collapse of the UK, gentlemen. And this, in turn, could be the catalyst which triggers the disintegration of the EU. This is we're getting involved in a situation here which could snowball very, very speedily. So we're in dangerous territory, and for people to be playing political games at this time is absolutely a type of insanity, political insanity.
Well, I think according to most people, certainly the two gentlemen in the room here, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but do you think that we'll be in a big disaster heading on to no deal? And indeed, our no deal bringing down the EU, as Ken's suggesting?
I think the EU is at risk here, and clearly half of the problem with this Brexit negotiation is the EU have got to keep an eye on other countries, probably specifically Hungary, that might be interested in leaving the European Union. And so, you know, there is always going to be moves in Brussels that say, look, let's try and punish the British just to hold ourselves together. So look, it is an existential threat to the European Union. I'm with George. I genuinely think the European Union will survive, but will be a very different place in 20 years' time to what it is now. But yeah, look, the risk is all round. And I think the Bob Blackman point, which is, let's have a little bit of, was it Bob Blackman who made the point? Anyway, whoever it was, a little bit of brinkmanship with the European Union actually exposes the fact that they are not in as strong a position as they pretend to be. They do need the money, and they do need a deal.
But perhaps, I mean, they have never said that they won't suffer. They have,
no.
They have admitted.
Gentlemen, Italy, Spain, Greece, Portugal, now France, even Germany is in big trouble financially, especially Italy. They are on the verge of collapse without anything happening.
But
in
you
the
know
UK.
What's very interesting, Ken? Do you know what's very interesting? I'm glad you brought up Italy. Italy had a referendum, not a referendum, they had a poll on EU membership, and it came back 83% want to stay in the EU. Salvini, a couple of days ago, Salvini said he certainly wants Italy to remain a member of the EU. Greece, the country I'm from, and I tell you what, my view of the EU is very, very different to the rest of yours here, because I've seen what it's done to my country. But even in Greece, the people want to stay in the EU. Yanis Varoufakis, former Greek finance minister, a vociferous critic of the EU. Guess what he's doing now? He's trying to get elected in the EU Parliament to change it from within.
Ah, but Alexis, the reason why the Greeks are very much in favour of the European Union, even if they agree with us, they believe that the European Union can be reformed.
Yes.
And I think that somebody like me believes the European Union cannot be reformed. Now, I might be wrong, but that is the fundamental difference.
If they reform
gentlemen,
let's go back into it. But they won't reform it any more than my auntie can become my uncle, as I put it earlier. I hope that the EU, as presently constituted, as presently run, does collapse. And all this project fear stuff, we were given all that before we voted to leave. So there's no point in reheating it. A souffle doesn't rise twice. You've tried all these threats of Armageddon, Armageddon.
I remember,
and they didn't work.
I remember when
the
CBI told us that if we did not join the euro, there would be 2 million job losses.
Yeah,
I mean, that never happened, did it?
I do worry, though, a little bit about trying to take forecasts and using them as proof that all forecasts are wrong. I mean, certainly the Treasury got a few things wrong. But
I mean,
they
that's charitable, Alexis.
Well, I'm being charitable. I have to be balanced. But they didn't get everything completely wrong. But I just wanted, before we look at the papers, so from your point of view, the warnings we've had from Dover Council about what they're facing, they're saying, they're not saying whether they're pro or anti the deal. They're saying, listen, this is the situation we are facing. We're not getting much help from the government. But as far as you're concerned, it's project fear.
It is project fear,
It's
project fear plus a failure to prepare. We have had 2 years, and now we're hearing Bob Blackman say we're going to need to step up the preparations.
I mean, that's just
for a no-deal Brexit. We should have been... Even as a negotiating tactic, unless you persuade the other side that if the deal is not to your liking, you're off, you're out, you're on the stones, as we used to say in the trade union movement. Unless the other side believes that, then they're not going to offer you anything that can keep you there.
I think there's two things, though. Yes, there is Project Fear, but there's also Project Motherhood and Apple Pie. Look, you know, when we change from being a European Union country into being an independent country, there are going to be problems at Dover. There are going to be problems in terms of, you know, regulation of medicine. There are going to be problems with logistics and all of those things. I think the issue that we have debated today more than anything else boils down to this. Theresa May has failed to deal with those problems. It is only responsible to both negotiate a deal and to be ready if there's no deal. And Dover, and in answer to your question, Alexis, is Dover Council wrong to say there are major problems being stored up at our port? No, they are not. But that problem is not related to the referendum. That is related to the failure of this Conservative government. And bear in mind, I used to be political advisor at Maidenhead Council, Windsor and Maidenhead Council, which is Theresa May's own constituency. I know this woman. I like this woman. I'm a Conservative through and through. I vote Conservative. But she has absolutely goofed this up. And
she only had one job.
Do you think perhaps, and Andrea, I'm going to direct this to you to start with. Do you think that perhaps part of the reason that we are where we are is because people before the referendum and just after the referendum, people like David Davis said there will be no downside to Brexit, only considerable upside. Michael Gove, the day after we vote to leave, we hold all the cards, we can choose the path we want. John Redwood, getting out of the EU can be quick and easy, the UK holds most of the cards. Need I go on?
Yeah.
Well, there's a good one from Liam Fox. The FTA that we will do with the EU should be one of the easiest in human history. Well, and my personal favourite, David Davis saying that the day after the Brexit referendum, he will be on the door to Berlin striking a deal with Germany, which kind of...
Actually, I hate to say this, but I think it's the other way around. The big problem that you've got with Ollie Robbins and Theresa May is that they are people who have looked at this and said, Brexit is a disaster. How do we mitigate that disaster? Now, whichever way you look at it, you know, getting out of the customs union, getting out of the backstop, not paying the money, there were opportunities that could have been grabbed, but none of them have been grabbed at all.
Okay, let's have a quick look at the papers before we are all released, let out of the room and off to our beds. The Daily Star have done a sterling job of a bit of photoshopping. Theresa May as a Klingon with May the Klingon Prime Minister.
Klingons on the starboard bow.
There's
it's life, Jim, but not as we know it.
There's an image that will stay with you forever. Can't get that out of your mind. Have you guys got anything?
I love
any
the
other
Daily
ones?
Mirror. That's my favourite. Picture of Theresa May going past that absurdly large Christmas tree outside number 10 it's lame duck for Christmas. Oh, her goose is cooked.
I thought, so you picked the most fun ones, so I've got to go with the boring ones, but I thought it was really interesting that, the kind of right-wing press, the Mail and the Express, essentially have the same headline. The Mail's version is, now let her get on with the job, and the Express's version is, now just let her get on with it. And I think that kind of the view now is that there is a risk, potentially, of there being a general election. I don't believe it, I've said that earlier, but I think there is a concern in the right-wing press that that this all plays into Jeremy Corbyn. Corbyn's hands, and actually that's the most dangerous deal of them.
It's pretty interesting how the Mail has changed.
I was going to say, it's extraordinary under its new stewardship.
Under its new stewardship, it's become effectively, very different, let's put it that
very,
way.
It's fair to say that people that respond to me on Twitter, who used to like the Daily Mail very much, are now not as keen.
But the most damaging one, Alexis, is the Times.
The Times.
The Times is a very much sort of pro-May, pro-conservative, not particularly pro-Brexit. Its headline, May scrapes home.
And also the line underneath, wounded leader survives Tory confidence vote. It's
that's
grim reading.
Damaging.
It'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow, of course. Will everybody still be in their posts? What is May going to bring back? When are we going to see this meaningful vote? And, of course, what is the opposition going to do? Gentlemen, thank you very much. It's flown by.
Been a pleasure.
I've had a very, very nice time. Thank you for all your texts, your calls, and your tweets. And thank you for keeping us company all the way until the wee hours of the morning. One last question, one word answer. We've got to go in 30 seconds. Prediction. People's vote or general election? Andre?
General election. Go for it.
Okay.
I'll tell you tomorrow night on my own show at 7 o'clock, the mother of all talk shows.
Friday. It's Friday, George, not tomorrow. And, of course, you can join my show, which is 4 to 7 on Saturday. I do start with the Brexit Hour. And, it's going to be Brexit all the way. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Andrew Walker, George Galloway. It's been an absolute pleasure.